This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano, coming to you live each and every weekday from New York City. What is New York City? New York City is one of the most misunderstood places in the world. When I say we're misunderstood, I don't mean people don't get the kind of people we are. I don't mean people don't understand our culture. I don't mean people don't get along with us. I don't mean they think we're rude when we're not rude. No. When I say New York City is one of the most misunderstood places in the world, it is misunderstood in the fact that people really don't know what New York City is, at least far too many of them. Now, it used to kill me, even as a child. My mom would take me on vacation. We'd be on a cruise or Disney World or wherever, California. And, you know, you'd be on a tour or something, and somebody would say, hey, where are you from? Where are you from? Where are you from? And the people would say, usually New York, or sometimes they'd even say New York City. And I'd go up to these people and say, well, where? Where in New York are you from? And they'd say, Long Island. And it would kill me. It would kill me that these Long Islanders would represent themselves as New York City residents all over the country, all over the world. But as much as that drives me crazy, my continued frustration is that people don't recognize what New York City is. And I'm not talking about Long Island and the surrounding suburbs. It kills me that people refer to New York City and they mean just one borough, Manhattan. I can't tell you how many times that I have heard I've referenced something in Staten Island or Brooklyn or Queens, and somebody will say to me, how far is that from the city? Or can't we meet in the city? Or, oh, isn't that restaurant in the city? I'm telling you.
You know what really grinds my gears?
What really kills me is when people refer to, quote unquote, the city as meaning only Manhattan. New York City is five boroughs. And it's been that way since 1898. I am sick and tired of people using the term the city to refer to just Manhattan. You want to say Manhattan? You want to refer to something in Manhattan? Say Manhattan. Say Manhattan Island. And you know what? I'm even okay with you saying New York. My friend Dennis does that. He says, oh, you going to New York today? And I'm okay with that because it is New York County. Don't say the city unless you mean all five boroughs. It makes me cringe. It grates on me like you wouldn't believe. And I was trying to figure out who the worst offenders of this are, the people that do this the most. And in my view, it tends to be people who have moved, who are either visiting New York and live elsewhere, or they've moved to Manhattan from somewhere else. And we know there's many of them. The people that Eric Adams refers to that moved here from Iowa and Kansas and New Hampshire. And they use the term the city to mean Manhattan. And The Gothamist actually did an article about this a while ago. And there was a quote in this that I just loved. John Del Signor, who at the time was a reporter from The Gothamist. I don't think he is anymore. I know John. He's a good reporter, actually. They were having a debate about whether it's okay to use this term, the city, or not. And John said, quote, "We are all the city, even those of us who reside in Staten Island. But elitist real estate masterminds have succeeded in convincing New Yorkers of Manhattan's pseudo-significance. I, for one," this is John speaking, but I wish it was me who came up with these words, "I, for one, refuse to submit to the soft bigotry of Manhattan exceptionalism, amen, and have never hesitated to correct anyone who insults New York City's other four boroughs by mislabeling that arrogant little overpriced island across from New Jersey as the city. This is probably why I have so few friends, that and what some people have mislabeled pretentiousness." Those are the words of John Del Signor, but I completely agree with him. Maybe not on the few friends, but everything else I agree with. And I will tell you, I think this needs to stop. So I'd love to hear from you at 1-800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Number one, do you say the city and refer to it as Manhattan? Number two, are you as irked at when people do this as I am, particularly if you're an outer borough resident like I am? And number three is, who do you think the worst offenders of this are? In my view, it's people visiting here, and it's people that have moved here from other parts of the country. Does it kill you as much as it kills me when they say the city? 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. And I also want to take you back in time to Friday morning at 1 a.m. during the Ask Frank Anything portion of the show, when I received a call from a gentleman who suggested that we institute a new rule in the tradition of Bob Grant.
I think you should invoke some version of the Bob Grant once-a-week rule. And, again, not to put anybody down, but you know, there's certain times where certain people, maybe certain, it looks like you're expecting them to call, like, and they have an opinion on everything, sometimes twice in a show, and it's every day. And, you know, even if you don't want to do once a week, maybe once every 3 days. Or my suggestion, again, you know, I'm just giving you my opinion, and of course it's your show, but I think that's the only criticism I have.
Now, I thought about that, and what I said in that discussion is, and I get it. I mean, I get it sounds a little boring to hear the same people call every single radio show every single day. And I thought about this a great deal over the weekend, and I'm curious as to where you fall on this, because what I brought up on Friday was maybe instituting a twice a week rule rather than once a week, excluding the 15 seconds of fame. And I have to be honest, I've thought about it a lot, and my inclination is to not institute this rule. And I want to hear from you and get your thoughts on this, because my thinking is this. I usually go to the new callers first anyway, or I go to the less frequent callers first anyway. Usually I go to the regular callers. Unless the regular callers are specifically on point, I usually go to the regular callers last. So I don't know that we need to exclude them. I mean, I don't know if it's the case where there's lines and lines of people that find themselves unable to get through on the telephone. So give me your thoughts on that as well. But first, I am really ticked off.
You know what really grinds my gears?
At the number of people that call Manhattan the city. I'm not a violent guy. I haven't been in a fight, in a fist fight, I don't think, since the 12th grade. Or maybe one random bar fight in college or something, but certainly not in many, many years. When I hear someone say the city and they are referring only to Manhattan, it makes me want to strangle them. It's all five boroughs. 800-848-9222. Frank, Mike is in New Jersey. Hello, Mike.
Yeah, you must make a lot of money and lead a very, very boring life if you let something like this really aggravate you. With all the things going on, nonsense like this drives you crazy? Are you for real?
I am for real, Mike.
Well, you know what? Like I said, you must make a lot of money and have a very, very boring life.
I must. I will have you over my yacht one day, Mike. Although, I don't know, you strike me as kind of a difficult person to socialize with. Frank is from Queens. Hello, Frank.
Hey, Frank. I called you before, and I had mentioned at one time I had worked for a well-known ratings company.
Yes, I remember that.
I'm a kid from Queens. I went to St. John's University. I graduated in the mid-90s, got my first job in Midtown Manhattan, and I learned very quick that I apparently am not from the city. And I would actually sit in meetings with clients all throughout the country, and we would be making small talk before the meeting would start. And I would have management and bosses saying how they live in the city, and then when it was my turn, I'm like, I live in Queens. It's ridiculous. And to your prior caller, he doesn't think it's important. Let me give him an example of why it is. For years, people at this company and other companies that I worked at and people I know worked at, if you were a quote-unquote bridge and tunnel, outer borough, ethnic Italian, Irish, Italian, or Jew, you were looked down upon. You had a ceiling that you would hit in the workplace. So it's very relevant.
Well, thank you, Frank. I appreciate that. And, you know, it's interesting. There was one view in the same Gothamist article that I read in which I agreed with John Del Signore. There was one view that represents the other side. And I don't agree with it, but I think this fellow, Jake Dobkin, who's a native New Yorker who's raised in Brooklyn, represents this view well. And maybe some of you agree with him. And that's fine if you are. I'm not going to get crazy. I won't. But what he says is he's in favor of calling Manhattan the city. And what he says, I think we outer borough residents call Manhattan the city as a way of separating ourselves from its hegemony, as a way of repudiating its values of consumerism and celebrity. We, the everymen of and women of Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, and Staten Island, have much in common with our rural forebears in that we think of Manhattan as a boiling cesspit of disease and despair, surely a product of Satan that we refuse to associate ourselves with. Now, I think that's somewhat tongue-in-cheek. I get what he's saying, though. It's a little outer borough pride to refer to Manhattan as the city. But I don't like it. I don't like it at all, and I'll tell you why. There's two reasons. One, I find it divisive. I find that it pits communities within the same city, and we are all in this together. We're all protected by the NYPD. We all have our trash picked up and our snow plowed by the Department of Sanitation. And if any of us get arrested, there's a good chance that we'll be sent to Rikers Island, at least. Well, actually, that used to be the case, no longer the case. But our taxes all go to the same place, and we're all in this together. So by pointing those guys over there, that's the city. Or even introspectively, if we say those of us that live in Manhattan, we're the city, those guys, that's Brooklyn, that's Staten Island. It creates a sense of dissension, distrust, and disunity, which I think will only serve to tear New York apart further at a time when we're already pretty polarized. In addition to that, there are so many parts of Brooklyn, the Bronx, Queens even, not so much Staten Island except maybe on the North Shore, that could fit in just as well in Manhattan as they do in their existing boroughs. So I really do think it's inaccurate. I mean, we know it's inaccurate, but I think it's inaccurate even the way people mean it. 800-848-9222. Susan is in Brooklyn. Hello, Susan.
Oh, Frank, I'm so glad you brought this topic up.
Thank you.
Because I work from home, and sometimes I always have WABC on, and I can hear some of the same callers, and there's like maybe six of them or so, and they call under different names from New Jersey, and then they'll call the same show under a different name from Yonkers.
Right. Well, yeah, the worst offenders.
They're the same person.
Yeah, no. Again, a lot of that is the fault of an untrained call screener or an untrained host in not recognizing the voice of the person. Now, if you notice on this show, as soon as Steve from Manhattan calls under any of his aliases, I recognize him immediately. So that's why on this show he actually calls us Steve from Manhattan. But your point's well taken. That's why there's this guy who calls the show every day, who always wants to talk about this cop who was convicted wrongfully by Jeanine Pirro or something. And because he's always lying about his name and where he's from and what he wants to talk about, it makes me actually against his cause. It makes me want to not learn about whatever it is he's been trying to talk about for 10 years. And it makes me want to keep this guy that might be wrongfully imprisoned in prison, even though it might be a cause that I normally support. So thank you, Susan. 800-848-9222. Jeremy is in Ulster County. Hello, Jeremy.
Hi, yes. I got a little different perspective on the issue than most of your listeners. Mine is I'm a concealed carrier up north, and the five boroughs are – I'm treated like a pedophile down there. So,
are you, in fact, a pedophile?
Caution. What's that?
Are you, in fact, a pedophile?
Oh, in no way, shape, or form.
Well, no. So, but to your point, Jeremy,
political elite are the only ones that can get a pistol permit down in the city.
Well, you're right, Jeremy. You're right. But the rule regarding guns applies. The laws are applied the same as in all five boroughs. So, would you agree with me that the people that use the term "the city" to apply only to Manhattan and not the other four boroughs are committing an egregious error?
I agree wholeheartedly. Wholeheartedly.
All right, Jeremy.
It's all one big part of the city right down there.
That's right.
And take it in stride. I work construction, and it's a beautiful city for what it is. Little rough parts, but it's all one big city, all the five boroughs. You can't just look at
it. Exactly, Jeremy. Exactly. Now that I know you're armed, I'm glad we're on the same side of this one. 800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Gina is in Brooklyn. Hello, Gina.
Hi, Frank. Thank you. Oh, you cracked me up. I love your passion.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say this topic reminds me of a couple of things. My mother was born in Manhattan and moved to Brooklyn when she was 16 years old and said Brooklyn was the country, according to the Manhattanites at that time. Also, my cousins that grew up in Brooklyn and moved to Long Island used to refer to Brooklyn as the city. Are you going back to the city tonight? So they always included Brooklyn in as the city. But as a professional working in Brooklyn, it was only the snobs that didn't consider Brooklyn
right,
city.
Right. You know, you just nailed, I think, exactly what my issue with this is, Gina. It's so elitist to say one borough out of five is the city and to say that the rest of us, oh, please, you're living there amongst the plebeians, amongst the peasants in Brooklyn, in the Bronx, in Staten Island. You're right. It is so incredibly pretentious.
Yes, but my mother did describe Brooklyn with trolley cars and farmland, and we had a small house in Gravesend, and we got beautiful tomatoes in our yard because the soil really was like farmland.
Well, I would actually love to bring those trolleys back. In fact, I might suggest that to Curtis when we have our call tomorrow, if he gets elected, make that part of his platform, because the trolleys were a big part of Brooklyn culture and Brooklyn history. In fact, you know the baseball team, the Dodgers?
Yes.
You know how they got their name?
No.
They were originally called the Trolley Dodgers because you'd dodge the trolleys as you'd walk around as a pedestrian with all those trolleys around Brooklyn.
Very interesting. Thanks, Fred.
Thank you, Gina. 800-848-9222. We'll continue with your calls in a minute. That's 1-800-848-WABC. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. Straight ahead.
You're hearing things. Huh? 77 WABC.
It's the Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
From New York City. That's right, New York City, all five boroughs, not merely one. This is Frank Morano on the other side of midnight. I am a boy. I'd like to consider myself a man, but I probably am not nearly as mature as I should be if I want that title. So, as so many of you have pointed out from time to time, so I guess maybe boy is an apropos term. Talking about the use of the term the city, to apply, as applied to just Manhattan, drives me crazy. I'm curious, does it drive you crazy? And two, who do you think are the kinds of people that say it? My contention is it's mostly people that are from out of the area that either visit here or move here. But I thought Gina brought up a good point that it's essentially it's pretentious snobs that use this term to apply to just Manhattan. And I'm curious what your view of this is. 800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Gary in Inwood. Hello, Gary.
Good morning, Frank. For my purpose, born and raised in the South Bronx, moved to Inwood, the top of Manhattan in the early 70s. So from my perspective, as far as I'm concerned, it's the Bronx and Manhattan when I refer to New York City. The other three boroughs, there's no movement or no reason in my life for me to be in those boroughs at any time in my whole life. If I never was there, it just wouldn't affect me in any way. So,
well, I mean, you could be the
friends of my circle, Manhattan and the Bronx, as far as we refer to New York City.
All right, Gary. Thank you. 800-848-WABC. Joe is in Jamaica. Hello, Joe.
Good evening, Mr. Morano.
Howdy.
You know what? Listening to what you were saying, I'm going to draw a nice comparison for you. You are, without question, the godfather of New York City because you represent the five families that we call our boroughs, and you're demanding respect for each one of them, and I appreciate that and so forth. So if anyone has any problem, you're showing the fire, the tenacity, and so forth, and you're absolutely correct. Each part of the five boroughs is New York City. I live here in Queens. That's New York City. You're in Staten Island. That's New York City. People have to go up and understand that. If they don't, that's their problem. But you are definitely the godfather.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Joe. That is a surefire way to get me indicted as part of a racketeering indictment, which is the last thing I want. But I appreciate the way in which you I appreciate the way in which you meant it, though. Let me say hello to a gentleman named L in the city.
This is Al from Manhattan.
Oh, it's Al, not L. Okay. Well, you have the distinction, Al, although it's L
I'm using my one quota call, if that's possible. Can
yes. Well, we haven't instituted that rule formally yet. I'm still on the fence. I want to see what everybody else has to say about it.
Okay. Hey, Frank, you're doing a great job this year. Everything's going good, real smooth. I want to say this. To me, it's always been like this, the way I look at it. People on the outer boroughs kind of like look at it like, well, I'm going into the city. They're going to go over a bridge. They're going to go over a ferry. That's where all the tall buildings are, you know, where it's really fast paced. You know, things are, you could be in Astoria or Flushing or Brooklyn, Staten Island. It's a little bit quieter there. You know, so the real center, the nervous city, like in London, they call the main financial the city. That's the way I've always looked at it, you know, and I've been here my whole life. You know, people on the island. Well, that's different. That's a little bit further of a haul. But even being close, the city is that final, I got to cross a bridge. I got to go through a tunnel. I got to go to a ferry. You know what I mean? That's the way I look at it.
Well, I don't disagree with you. I think the cultural thing is right. I think there is a different culture, but I think the same could be said of any borough, right? I mean, if you're going to the Bronx,
that's true.
You know, then there's certainly a different mentality about going to the Bronx. The same as if you're going anywhere else. Certainly, Staten Island. I just don't understand.
It's all unique. Staten Island is like to me the country. You know, relatively. Brooklyn is, you know, unique in its own way. Queens is, you know, Flushing mainly in Astoria, the big centers. And the Bronx, I think of Yankees, the Grand Concourse. You know, they all have their different flavor.
But oh, no doubt. Absolutely. Always, absolutely. And you know, I've been very blessed to spend a lot of time in all five boroughs. But you're exactly right. I think you're right on the...
Just one more suggestion.
Sure,
as far as the guests. You know what? That, to me, they're a part of the fabric over the years. You know, I mean, you can name them. It's usually the same 12 suspects over and over again. But even though you go to 37 states, right, it's like if you eliminate these people, right, for whatever reason, and some are serial callers by calling, you know, Dominic, Rita, on and on, you know, all day long. My question to you is this. It's kind of like you're starting fresh and new, and there's like you're losing something.
That's a good point. That's a good point, Al. I think you. I think you might have won me over on that one, Al.
Joe Franklin not having that sidekick yet, Dr. Ornstein. You know, it's a little something. Ed McMahon, Johnny, your audience, a little part of it through these years. I followed you from 970. You know why? I knew you were good. You were the best thing out there. It's not two truckers talking about, you know, the rain in Iowa. You know what I mean? I don't need that. Or politics, politics, politics. No, you're the man on politics. But guess what? You mix it up. You got UFOs. You got Elvis. You got this. You got that. And that's the beauty of your show. And that's why it's going to go further, in my opinion. Anyway, I'll let you go. And congratulations with your... forthcoming. All right?
I appreciate that, Al. Thank you. 800-848-9222. Bill is in Brooklyn. Hello, Bill.
Hey, Frank. How you doing? The previous caller mentioned the five different, flavors. He mentioned that each borough has its own flavor. Yeah. And they're all individual, and none of us like each other. But we're going to the city because nobody lived in the city. We all lived in the outer boroughs, if we can use that phrase, too. So the phrase, the city, is something I was brought up. And the fact that it bugs you, I like it. You know, it's something that we all got these little things we got to deal with in life. But this one is like anybody. And you mentioned that people who are not from here tend to call it the city. I don't want to be a part of Manhattan. I don't want to be a part of Queens. I know we're all attached except for Staten Island. Staten Island is Brooklyn light. That's what happened when the bridge got built.
But Bill, now you don't have to be a part of Manhattan, but you're just as much not a part of Manhattan if you call it Manhattan as opposed to the city.
Well, you know what? Technically, all the boroughs, they have their names, and I would never tell you. I'm in the band. So where are you playing tonight? We're playing in the city. No, we're not playing in Queens. We're not playing in the Bronx. And how come Bronx has the in front of it?
Well, because years ago there was a family in the Bronx that owned most of the. There was a family in that part of what was New York City at the time that owned a lot of the land up there. So when people were going up there to see them in that part of the city, which that's what the city was prior to 1898, they would say, "I'm going to see the Bronxes," or "I'm going to the Bronx's house," or "I'm going to the Bronxes."
Is that their name, the Bronxes?
Yeah, the family was the Bronx. Yeah.
Oh, Bronx. Okay. Yeah. Well, I'm from Coney Island, 68 years, been living in Brooklyn. It's a part of everybody loves the borough that they're from. But I guarantee you we all go to the city. We go to the city to see plays. We go to the city to see whatever. The city is where all the attractions are. And then I worked for transit for 27 years. So I worked in all the boroughs, and I got to see all these different things and deal with the tourists. And I tell them, hey, you got to come down and see Coney Island. You know, they know about it. They know about Coney Island in the book, but They don't see it as part of the city.
Hey, well, I'm a big fan of Coney Island, as I think you know, Bill.
I was born there, West 32nd and Mermaid.
Well, so I wasn't born there, but I worked there for 3 years, and I still go back as often as I can. But when I meet tourists, especially when they're from out of the country, and I run into them at a bar somewhere or just on the street or in a park, and they ask me where should I go, right? The first thing I say is get out of Manhattan, and I send them to places like Coney Island. I send them on the Staten Island Ferry. I send them to to Arthur Avenue in the Bronx, because those places are really where the New York spirit, I think, is most embodied and most survives. And it kills me. And Bill, thanks for the call. To hear these arrogant, pretentious SOBs calling Manhattan the city. I hate it. 800-848-9222. Pedro is in the Bronx. Hello.
Good morning, Frank. How are you doing?
Well, thank you. I'm well.
It still bothers me to this day, after 65 years, that people still refer to it as the city. For years, you know, especially when I, you know, first got a job in Manhattan, and it's like, okay, let's go hang out in the city. But you are in the city.
Right.
And
right.
In my mentality, it's the five boroughs is the city. But no, it's like, no, let's go specifically to Manhattan and hang out. Or what about, you know, going someplace else? No. We have to go to the city. And to this very day, it bothers me to no end.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you, Pedro. I think we're on the same page on this one. 1-800-848-WABC. Lucy is in the Bronx. Hello.
Hi, Frank. When we were younger, we used to say, let's go downtown. We never referred to it as let's go to the city.
Well, that's because you and your friends weren't pretentious and trying to look down upon people that lived in the other four boroughs.
Yeah, and even...
Yeah, you know, Lucy, your phone is all screwed up, so I have to let you go. I hate to do it because it sounds like you have a lot of intelligent things to say, but you were a victim of poor phone screening from Ryan. What can we say? 800-848-WABC. Let me say hello to Leo in Westchester. Hello, Leo.
Hey. I give you a perspective of foreigner. I came here from Stuttgart 30 years ago. And somehow I consider myself New Yorker after 30 years, even though...
Well, you are. You're just as much of a New Yorker as anybody else.
I live 2 minutes from the border. I'm in Westchester living now, but I'm mostly working in Manhattan, mostly calling from Manhattan. I learn when I say New York, I mean five boroughs. That's how I learn in 30 years. If somebody specifies New York State, that's what means to me, New York State. If somebody says New York, it's five boroughs. If somebody say city, it's Manhattan. And this is first time when I heard, and I used to live on Upper East Side for years. I have a house in Jackson Heights. Now I move from Upper East Side to Westchester. I'm living in Westchester for years. But this is the first time when I hear from somebody actually complain that I would refer to Manhattan as a city. And I think one thing I want to say, what in my head is, any of the boroughs, Brooklyn, Queens, Staten Island, have parts which are like a city, especially Long Island City now with all the skyscrapers, and Brooklyn, Williamsburg. But other parts of Brooklyn, Bronx, and Queens are private houses with 2-3 acres of land around. You cannot find that in Manhattan. Manhattan is really city, city, city. There is no little piece of land around one family house. That's every of the other boroughs have. That's more like a country. That's my explanation why probably people refer more to city. I never felt like special living on Upper East Side. I was living in such a little place that I moved with the same rent I paid for one-room apartment. I moved into 1,300 square loft.
All right. Well, I appreciate the history lesson there, Leo, as well. I don't want to spend the whole hour on this because I do have some other things to get to, but I'll squeeze in one or two other people who have been patiently holding, and then we'll move on to some other issues because there's a lot to cover. Let me say hello to Lee in West Orange. Hello, Lee.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
First of all, you called out the person that lives in Long Island that says she lives in New York. I mean, what was she supposed to say? She lives in New Jersey or Iowa or California?
No, she should say she lives. No. What I said was when people. All right, I'm going to put you back on hold, Lee, and then I'm going to clarify my comment, and then I'll invite you to make a comment in response. So what I said was when I would hear these Long Islanders. Lee hung up. What I said was when I would hear these Long Islanders represent themselves as New Yorkers and New York City residents around the country, I would cringe because that's not who I wanted representing New Yorkers. Those aren't New Yorkers, at least not New York City residents. They're Long Islanders. Now, there might be residents of New York State, but there's such a different culture and an attitude on Long Island as compared to the five boroughs. Now, I like Long Island. My wife is from Long Island. But it's that's not how people in California and Florida and around the country and around the world should view New Yorkers. A different accent, a different history, a different culture. Everything is different. 800-848-WABC. Let me say hello to Frankie in Brooklyn. Hello, Frankie.
Yeah, hi, Frank. I live in Brooklyn all my life. And years ago, we used to say we're going to go to the city. That meant Manhattan. That's like an in-house thing, you know. That's because Brooklyn was low houses. You know, there was only about downtown Brooklyn was only about two or three tall buildings. But when we go to the city, that was like the big lights and everything like that. But that was an in-house thing. You know, we always say, "Oh, we're going to the city." That's all it is. But this is New York City. Yes, you know, but. That's how we used to say it, you know?
All right. Well, we'll make that the last word on the subject, Frankie. We'll return and cover some other areas, including the Columbus Day Parade today, which was a lot of fun. 800-848-WABC. We'll delve into some other issues as well. At this time, we'll get into the mayor's race. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
77 WABC. All-American.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. Thank you for tuning in to our show. Hopefully you had a fun day today. It was Columbus Day. Well, yesterday, technically. We're an hour into tomorrow. It was Columbus Day. I had a great time at the parade. If you were listening to yesterday's show towards the end, I was kind of trying to figure out how I should spend the hours between 6 a.m. and noon. Because yesterday I was anchoring and I didn't realize – I'm glad I wore a clean suit because I was not dressed like a schlub like I usually am because I didn't realize that it was going to be simulcast on video as well. But I was anchoring the noon hour live from the Columbus Day Parade. So – I was trying to figure out what I should do between 6 a.m. and noon, and I got a lot of good suggestions because my wife has been pressuring me for a while to get a haircut. And again, I am now at the point where the combination of my putting on a few pounds and letting my hair grow to unseemly lengths, I can now no longer look in the mirror. I now avert my eyes whenever I pass a mirror. So I was on the fence in terms of what I should do yesterday morning. Should I go get a haircut? Because my barber shop in Manhattan, not the city, in Manhattan opens at 7:30. Should I take a nap? Or Curtis had an interview that he needed me to help prep him for yesterday. Should I do the Curtis interview prep. So all or some combination of two of the three. So ultimately, I decided to go to Arthur Idala's law office and take a nap there. He was kind enough to give me a pass so that I could go in without having to be put on the guest list. So I could just go there and sleep. It's the one of the nicest things anybody's ever done for me. And I ultimately went there, took a nap. I left my phone on so that Curtis could call me in terms of when he needed, you know, help. So I answered Curtis, did not get a haircut. So I got a few hours of sleep yesterday morning, which was nice. And then I went over to the parade. I got to the parade at around 11:30. Now, I didn't really know what the game plan was. They just told me you're going to be on the air live at noon. Get there at 11:30. And I did. And I got to tell you, it was so much fun. I am thrilled that I was there. I got a lot of great feedback from everybody who watched or listened to the show. And I got to co-host the hour, which I didn't know I was going to be doing, but I was certainly glad to have the opportunity. I got to co-host the hour with our owner, John Catsimatidis, the owner of our radio station. So that was a lot of fun. And then I also got to see we had a great little viewing area on 59th and 5th. Got to see everybody that was coming there, and saw a lot of people, a lot of the groups, a lot of marching bands from around the city, a lot of different the Colombian firefighters, the Colombian lawyers, the Colombian. I saw Arthur and his wife and his parents marching in the parade. That was fun. Got to see Tom DiNapoli and Congressman Tom Suozzi and all sorts of other people, Curtis Sliwa. It was interesting. Oh, two things. One thing I have to correct. One is I misspoke on the radio yesterday. And, you know, I guess I'm going to chalk this up to in part rushing and in part sleep deprivation. But I said at one point that Guglielmo Marconi, the inventor of radio, lived on Staten Island with Antonio Meucci, the inventor of the telephone. Now, that is not the case. For some reason, in that moment, I had conflated in my brain Giuseppe Garibaldi, the Italian revolutionary, and Guglielmo Marconi. Now, of course, I know that. I've been to Garibaldi's house. I know that's where Garibaldi lived. But for whatever reason, in that moment, I said Marconi because there was a Marconi banner and I was looking for a Staten Island connection. And of course, as soon as I said it, I got an instant text message from Staten Island's next borough president, Vito Fisella, correcting me. Now, I was embarrassed, one, to need to be corrected about anything, but two, that I have to be corrected by somebody whose esteem I value and who I have such respect for. So I want to publicly. Now, I did correct that because what we did was we stayed on the air and on TV until one. And then at one, they had to carry O'Reilly for 15 minutes on the radio. But we still continued the live broadcast from the parade on video on the website. So I made my correction on the live video stream, but if you were only listening on the radio, you did not get to hear my correction on the website. So I apologize on behalf of all radio enthusiasts, all Marconi fans, and all Garibaldi enthusiasts and Garibaldi historians. So apologies and thank you to Vito Fisella for correcting me on that. The other interesting thing is that you know who was not at the parade today? Well, Bill de Blasio was there. Tom DiNapoli was there. Not a very warm reception for Bill de Blasio, by the way. You might have heard Rita play the audio of that. He actually got booed and cursed at. I never like to do that with people, but whatever. People are very frustrated, appropriately so, not only at Mayor de Blasio being a disaster as mayor, but in terms of the things that he's done over the years, like not put the Mother Cabrini statue up initially and a bunch of other things that the Italian-American community feels particularly irked at, but that's besides the point. I think the mayor shows up somewhere, you should show him respect. That's my take, no matter who the mayor is. So speaking of mayors, Curtis Sliwa was there. You know who was not there? Eric Adams. Eric Adams did not even show up to this parade. I'm wondering why. Now, a spokesman told, I think, either Channel 7 or New York 1 that he did his celebrating for the Columbus Day Parade on over the weekend. And I guess that was that event in Bensonhurst. But it's very interesting that Eric Adams couldn't be bothered to show up. Now, he wouldn't have been booed. By all accounts, the Daily News, the New York Post, the New York Times, Politico, City and State, by all accounts, he's the favorite to win right now. So he hasn't really done anything that would have caused the people on the in the parade route to boo him. So I was surprised that he didn't show up. And I'm wondering if that portends the attitude that Eric Adams would have in the future towards Columbus Day in general and to this parade specifically. I certainly hope not if he does get elected, but we'll see what happens. I obviously hope Curtis wins. By the way, I thought there was a very interesting profile in the media outlet, The City. If you don't read The City, it's a very good, it's actually a nonprofit publication, but they do some great journalism covering New York City government and politics, and there's far too few outlets that did it. Now, this is the second very good profile in as many weeks on Curtis. Last week was City and State, although you had this jerk, Joe Loda, need to insert his commentary there. I mean, Joe Loda should know a thing or two about losing elections. And then, you know, you had that. So then you had this article in The City, which I thought was very fair. They had criticism of Curtis from people like Ron Kuby. They focused on some of Curtis's baggage, like the hoaxes that he staged over the years. But you know what I thought was interesting was the last line in this piece in The City. And it's from, of all people, Herson Barrero. Herson Barrero was Curtis's partner on New York One for many years. And then he was Curtis's partner on AM 970 for a brief time. But these two would drive each other so crazy that partnership quickly disintegrated. But here's what Herson Barrero said. He said, it's a steeply uphill battle to win in the general, but not impossible. To Adams, he says, you minimize Curtis at your own risk. That's a quote. There's no one in politics right now, in general, in New York, that knows New York City better than Curtis Sliwa. Herson Barrero, that's the last line in the story, and Herson Barrero is absolutely right on that score from where I'm standing. So I do recommend, I think I linked to it on my Facebook page. I'm going to link to it again in case you didn't have a chance to read it. It's facebook.com/MoranoFan. That's facebook.com/MoranoFan. It's fair. It's not a puff piece, but it's also not a hatchet job. I think it does a good job explaining Curtis's appeal and some of the pitfalls of Curtis's candidacy. I just linked to it so you can read it now. facebook.com/MoranoFan. 800-848-WABC. BJ is in Queens. He's been patiently holding. Hello, BJ.
Hey, you know, I saw you with those pastries, and I wanted to reach through the screen and grab a sphiadelle.
I'll tell you, it looked great, but I don't usually eat at noon anyway because that's when I'm sleeping. But I didn't have any, but everyone else that did have some, and Lydia was giving them away to the police commissioner, the fire commissioner, Tom DiNapoli, everybody. Everyone would just love them. They're from Calandra's, which generally does a great job.
That looked like a lot of fun. I'm sorry I missed it. It would have been nice to introduce myself to you. But I wanted to say two things. One, you definitely have to you got to bring back the once a week rule. There are people that just love to listen to themselves speak, and it's poor Dominic. He's stuck with this guy that takes up about 20 minutes of his show every night.
Oh, Drew. So
that guy. Forget about it.
But you know what though? You know what though? Just in defense of Drew and Dominic, one is I'm here when Dominic is doing his show. Yeah. Whenever Dominic selects Drew, there's always a full bank of calls. So he could choose someone else other than Drew. He's choosing Drew.
Yes.
And I think the reason he's choosing Drew is, and I applaud Dominic for this, is because Drew generally represents a contrary point of view to where the majority of the callers come from. And I get the sense that Dominic tries to give airing to all points of view on his show. And Drew is often the only one that has that particular point of view.
I agree with that, but there's a limit. You know, it's a balance. But getting to Curtis real quick, because I know you got a lot of people. Look, Eric Adams didn't show up today because he believes that it is Indigenous Peoples Day instead of Columbus Day. And I'll leave it at that. We need to make certain that we have a position with Curtis. He's going to protect the higher learning in the schools, the gifted programs. I know what happened when Marty Markowitz stopped being borough president and Eric Adams took over. What you said is exactly what happened. Marty Markowitz breathed life business-wise into that borough. I mean, it was a thriving metropolis, and he respected everyone's traditions. And one of the best borough presidents, in my opinion. Okay, I'm certain he has. You know, he had issues, but you know, Eric just totally. That was it. That was the end. The party was over when Marty left, and. You know, and that's the way New York. If you like, Mr. De Blasio, you're gonna love Eric Adams. We need to go another direction, and everyone needs to get out and do their thing on November, and make certain we get a guy in. And I think Barrero. I read that piece. The gentleman that Curtis used to be on the New York One with is 100% right. I think Mr. Adams is. He thinks he's crowned. You know, he thinks he's the boy from New Jersey who's going to win the mayor's race. Not going to happen. You cannot don't count Curtis out, because Curtis, one thing he does is he survives and thrives.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's a good point, BJ. And thank you for the call. It's funny. I received a call yesterday. I'm not going to say who it was from, but it was a relatively well-known former Democratic elected official. And this person said to me, you know, this person still works in a political field. So this person said to me, I want Curtis to win and I want to help Curtis, but I can't do it publicly because of my job. I'll tell you what. Give me a list of people to call on Curtis's behalf. And I'm going to spend all my time on the weekend and at night when I'm not working making calls on Curtis's behalf. This is someone that was a Democratic elected official for years. And this person said, everyone I talk to says the same thing about Curtis. They all like him. They're all going to vote for him. And they all say they're sure he can't win. Now, that's one of the things that that I think may inure to Curtis's benefit. The fact that so many people think this election is in the bag already, I think that may actually suppress voter turnout among some traditionally Democratic constituencies. So, and I think I really do think there's a closeted Curtis vote. Curtis is not a Trumper. He is a proud never Trumper. So you can't hang Trump on him, which is kind of an albatross in New York City. And I think really nobody has provided a great reason as to why they're not voting for Curtis, at least that, from what I've seen. 800-848-9222. Gary is in Rockaway. Hello, Gary.
Frank, thanks for taking my call. I hope you had some rest from doing all that heavy schedule with the parade and everything.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Well, I think that was really good on TV. I never really watched the parades like really a lot. I think I stayed there and watched it because Joe Piscopo was good and Sandra. And thanks, John, for all the opportunity that we have to you guys to give us the tri-state news, you know, so we could know what's going on except for the other news, you know.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure if John's listening, he's appreciative of your gratitude there. Thank you. 800-848-WABC. Let me say hello to Larry in Brooklyn. Hello, Larry.
Yeah. Hi. And, you know, I can't believe that Eric Adams did not go to the Columbus Day Parade. If that's true.
No, it is true. I watched everybody walk by, every single parade participant. He was not there. That is true.
Okay, this is probably the biggest perk that could possibly happen to Curtis, because you're going to tell me all the politicians flock to the gay parade. They all pay their respects like it's the Grand Dawn. You know, it's like Don Corleone. We got to show our respect to the gay parade. And he will not go to the, that's an insult to Italians. The people will go to the gay parade and they won't go to the oldest ethnic group that represents this country, Christopher Columbus. But they'll go to the gay parade. That shows that this Eric Adams, he's not afraid to insult white people. He has it in the bag.
We're going to have to end it there, Larry. Thank you. Until next hour, help control the pet population. Make sure you get your dog or cat spayed or neutered.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
Like every day, I am just gobsmacked by an item that's true, and it just leaves me scratching my head, shaking my head, and hitting my forehead. So that's three head-related activities: scratching, shaking, and hitting. Whenever I see a story, and it just makes me think of, my goodness, what will society do to itself next? Why can't society leave well enough alone? Now, let me preface this, as I always do, by saying I am a friend to the gays. I am a friend to the lesbians. Some very big good friend of the lesbians. The bisexuals, love them. The transgenders, the trans, you name everything. LGBTQIA, every letter of this alphabet. I am a friend to whatever sexual or gender issue is behind each of those letters. But not everything in the world has to come down to a discussion about erasing gender lines. If someone wants to be transgender, you know what I say? God bless them. As long as I can keep my gender intact, as long as I can continue to identify as a male, as long as I can enjoy my status as a cisgender male, do what you want. God bless you. I don't care. However, it's okay to recognize that a lot of society, particularly the overwhelming majority of children, identify not as non-binary, but as one gender or the other. And that leads us to the formerly great state of California. This is, all right, I'm going to read you what has happened here first, and I'm going to try and do it without snark and without commentary. I'll invite you to comment, and then I will insert some snark and commentary. Headline: New California law will force retailers to have gender-neutral toy sections. Let me repeat that, because it's a real struggle not to immediately inject snark and commentary. New California law will force retailers to have gender-neutral toy sections. This is from the Washington Post. A 10-year-old girl was shopping with her mother one day when she asked a question. Why were some toys off limits to her as a girl, but would be okay to play with if she were a boy? The girl was the daughter of a staffer who worked for a California lawmaker. This year, Assemblyman Evan Lowe cited the girl's question as an inspiration for a bill he wrote that will force some retailers to create gender-neutral children's sections in their stores. California Governor Gavin Newsom on Saturday signed Lowe's legislation, which will force large retailers to have non-gendered toy sections starting in 2024. Proponents said the requirements will help consumers comparison shop and also tamp down on gender stereotypes that hurt children who play with toys marketed to a different gender. Detractors said the law infringes on business owners' freedom to market their products and lay out their stores as they see fit. The new law won't prohibit stores from having traditional boys and girls sections, but it will require them to have a reasonable selection of toys and items in a gender-neutral section, regardless of whether they have been traditionally marketed for either girls or boys. This requirement will apply to retailers with 500 or more employees in California. Those failing to meet it on January 1st, 2024, will face a $250 fine for a first offense and a $500 fine for any offense after that. Pardon me. That is the sound of me banging my head against the console in front of me. This is the most ridiculous thing in the world. That was my first reaction. And you can comment as you see fit, 800-848-WABC. But my second reaction is, well, maybe this is good news. Maybe this is actually a sign that things are so good in the state of California that the state legislature and the governor has the time to waste to pass a law forcing retailers to create gender-neutral toy sections. I remember as a kid, my mom would take me to the toy store, my grandmother or my grandfather, my dad, and there would be a whole pink section of toys. And that whole pink section included Barbie dolls and easy bake ovens and all sorts of things. And I knew as a 5-year-old, a 6-year-old, a 7-year-old, that those were probably not toys that I would be interested in. Then I would know to go to all the other sections. As an older person, you know, 18 years old on, whenever I would have to go to a child's birthday party, 3-year-old, 4-year-old, 5-year-old, 6-year-old, I would go to those toy stores, those same toy stores in some cases, although some like KB Toys and Toys R Us largely went out of business, at least the ones in my neighborhood. And I would use those gender-coded colors, pink for girls and the other sections for boys, to know what kind of toy to pick up for a 4-year-old or a 5-year-old. Now, the whole underlying premise behind this law is ridiculous. Because when this 10-year-old girl was shopping with her mother and she asked the question, why were some toys off limits to her as a girl but would be okay to play with if she were a boy? Well, of course, that's not true. If you're a girl, you can play with a G.I. Joe. You can play with a wrestling toy. You can play with, I don't know what else is a boy's toy. You can play with a Ninja Turtle. You can play with a Superman toy, a Batman action figure, a Spider-Man action figure. You could play with a baseball glove. You could play with any boy's toy. It's not off limits to you. If there are any toys that are off limits to this 10-year-old girl, then she ought to take this up with her parents, including the staffer that works for Assemblyman Evan Lowe, instead of making it state law that private businesses now have to redo how they're marketing and displaying their toys. If this girl is not able to play with a G.I. Joe at 10 years old and she really wants to, the person she should take that up with is her parents or her father or mother. I don't know what her parent situation is, but that's who she should take issue with. She shouldn't be forcing legislation upon these toy stores. Do you know how difficult it is to be in business as a retailer right now? Retailers are getting hammered. It's so easy to buy things online. It gets shipped to you sometimes by the time you finished ordering it. That you have to pay property taxes. You have to pay exorbitant rents. You have to pay sky high. You have every disincentive in the world not to shop there. And now you have the government of the state of California telling you, well, now you now have to have a gender neutral toy section. And what if you're wrong? I mean, who's to say what toy is gender neutral? What toy is boys focused? What toy is girl focused? This is the most ridiculous thing that I have seen in at least 24 hours. Your reaction, 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. And the fact that proponents of the bill would say that this helps consumers comparison shop, what the heck does that mean? Why can't you comparison shop without a gender-neutral toy section? And tamps down gender stereotypes that hurt children? Come on! It's gender stereotypes that hurt children who play with toys marketed to a different gender? I don't know. My wife and I are expecting a child in December. I don't know if we're going to have a boy or a girl. If we had a girl and she wanted to play with typically male-oriented figures and toys, fine. If we had a boy and he wanted to play with Barbie dolls, fine. I couldn't care less. Let him or her play with whatever toys she wants or he wants. Makes no difference to me as a parent. Why do you have to upend the way that toy stores are laying out their shelving and their marketing? And if there is a market for gender-neutral sections of toy stores, then rest assured, you will see the retailers adjust to the free market and adjust to the people that they want to get in their stores. You know what you didn't see on television all weekend long? You didn't see any television advertisements advertising a Columbus Day weekend sale on cars, did you? You didn't see any television or newspaper advertisements advertising a Columbus Day weekend sale for mattresses. Those were ubiquitous when I was growing up. You don't see it now because Columbus Day has become so controversial that retailers are, in many cases, afraid to be affiliated with marketing around Columbus Day. So even though there's no law saying that these mattress stores can't offer a Columbus Day sale, they don't want to do it because they're afraid that will hurt the bottom line. If there are scores of children out there who are just devastated and can't find a toy to pick out in the toy store because these stupid toy stores are divided into boys' toys and girls' toys, then if there's a real market for that, which there's not, then the toy stores will respond. But to force all these toy stores to adjust to what the California legislature says is an appropriate use of marketing toys to children, or you get fined, it's for the birds. What do you think? 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Frank is in Babylon. Hello, Frank.
Hey, hi, Frank. How are you today?
I'm hanging in there. Thanks.
I was just listening to you talk about this legislation, and first thing that occurred to me, of course, I'm in agreement with you about it being a ridiculous, useless sort of thing, but the thing that my first impression is I'm very suspicious that it actually really happened that way. I heard the story about this this person that has, something to do with politics or works in politics, and that she brings a child to a toy store, and the child actually said that. I think it's a fabricated, in my mind, I'm thinking to myself, I never heard of such a thing where I raised five children, boys and girls. I have daughters and sons, and we bought toys, and if they were interested in them, they played with them. We didn't have to, go to a certain section in the toy stores. Sounds crazy to me.
Yeah, because it is crazy. Because this is absolutely crazy. I think. Go ahead.
I think they want to draw attention. I think they want to draw more and more attention to the separation and what this so-called separation and breaking down a so-called barrier that doesn't exist.
That's right. It is a barrier, a so-called barrier that doesn't exist. This is a way, from what it looks like to me, of pandering politicians to solve a problem that, as you said, doesn't exist and is not there. And it's a way for Assemblyman Evan Lowe to be the man of the year at this transgender group's dinner and to be the champion of the transgendered. You know, if you really wanted to do something about toys and children, you know what I'd do if I was in the state legislature or in Congress? I would introduce legislation banning advertising on children's programming. Banning it. Because what you are seeing, and this is a separate discussion, and we'll have this discussion another day, and I've had this discussion before with people like Ralph Nader, and I think Ralph is right on the money. What you are seeing, and they don't allow this in other countries, by the way, they do not allow this corporate assault on four-year-olds' brains when they're watching a program and they're almost hypnotized into needing to buy a Mr. Potato Head. That's something that's productive and that will actually affect a lot of children. This will do nothing for anybody except for Assemblyman Evan Lowe and for Governor Gavin Newsom, who now get to go around town, around the country and around the state of California, portraying themselves as champions of non-binary children. 800-848-9222. You may disagree with whatever you like. And again, I know we have a lot of transgender listeners. I'd love to hear from them as well. 800-848-WABC. If we have non-binary listeners as well, I'd love to hear from them too. Corey's in Rockland County. Hello, Corey.
Hey, Frank. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Thank you.
All right. So as far as this goes, I think this is, and by the way, KB Toys, I remember that. That was my favorite toy store.
It was one that I liked a lot, too.
I did like it a lot. This is completely ridiculous. I think that, you know, it's going to cause quite an issue. Maybe not at first. People will probably look at it and go, oh, yeah, I see where this goes. Yeah, well, let me tell you, next time you're invited to a kid's birthday party, you're going to say to your child, hey, little Bobby, Billy, James, whatever your name is, whatever, to your kid, what is little Susie like? What is little bit? They don't know. They're 5 years old. They're 6 years old. They'll tell you what they like. They have no idea. And you know what's going to happen? You're not going to know what toy to buy. You're going to sit there and go, do I buy whatever gender.
Right, a gender neutral toy, a boy's toy, a girl's toy.
They're not going to go to the party. They're not going to want to go to the party, Frank. Listen, this is going to cause parents to say, I'm going to opt out. Because people are going to be so, I hope you agree with me on this, but people are going to be so worried about being that one parent that they're going to ostracize themselves if they pick the wrong toy now. Are we kidding ourselves, Frank? I don't want to get upset, but, like, it's crazy, right?
In my view, it is, Corey. In my view, it certainly is. But I'm sure there are others that disagree. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. 7 open lines if you want to jump on board. Now's your opportunity. Carol is in West New York. Hello, Carol.
Hi there, Frank. I was a bit of a tomboy when I was younger. I mean, I think I still am in a way.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that, by the way.
No, there isn't, as far as I'm concerned. But I used to go to my local toy store, which was a fairly big store. And I used to buy Hot Wheels and trucks and like these monster models that you had to put together and paint and all that stuff. I wasn't interested in Barbie dolls and easy bake ovens and all that stuff. That just wasn't me, you know?
No, I understand that, Carol. And I don't think that this legislation would have changed your childhood at all, any way at all. So to me, again, it's a solution in search of a problem. It is a tremendous waste of time. It is a tremendous amount of agita for business owners in California. And it's just, I mean, I hate to say it, but I think it's idiotic, Carol. Thank you. 800-848-9222. And I don't like to call anything idiotic. But in my view, this is 1-800-848-9222 if you want to be heard. Coming up a little later, we will read your mail. If you want any mail read on air, if you have questions, if you have issues related to the show that you want addressed, you can email me at frank.morano, that's frank.morano, at wabcradio.com. It's frank.morano at wabcradio.com. If you want to send us snail mail, if you're not the email type, you can write to us at P.O. Box 1777. Send it to my attention, Frank Morano. That's P.O. Box 1777. Attention, Frank Morano, New York, New York, 10163. That's P.O. Box 1777. Attention, Frank Morano, New York, New York, 10163. Chris is in Mount Vernon. Hello, Chris.
Hey, how you doing, Frank? When we go to the store and we're going to look for a toy, I just basically follow my daughter's 5 years old. She walks in the store. I follow her around. She goes where she wants. I don't tell her, oh, you have to stay in this section or you have to stay in that section. She goes where she wants to go. The kids know what they like. You let the kid go. Whatever she grabs, she grabs. I mean, the only thing I would say I would agree with a gender neutral is, like, for instance, for you, you don't know what kind of child you have, and it kind of helps people buy you a gift or whatever because they don't know what you have. Hey, I'll get a gender neutral gift. Can't go wrong there. That's the only thing I would think is good for a gender neutral thing. Other than that, I don't get it. The kid goes where the kid wants. If you buy what the heck is going to be a gender neutral toy?
Well, again, that's such a good point, right? Is a slinky that's not pink or blue, is that a boy's toy or a girl's toy?
You got me. I don't understand. What are you going to have a section that's like one shelf?
Yeah, I mean, it's absurd. It's just absurd, Chris. Thank you very much. Where was I yesterday? I don't remember where I was, but Saturday. I was in a movie house, and they now have a male's restroom, a female restroom, and a gender-neutral restroom. And I get it, because that's what you need to do now. But there was no one using the gender-neutral restroom. And my thinking is that's exactly how it's going to be for this gender neutral toy section. Is people are still going to just get the toys they want. And these toys that are specifically geared to be marketed to the youthful version of the youthful version of Pat, the androgynous character, nobody's going to patronize that. I don't think. Richard's in Rockland County. Hello, Richard.
Yes, Frank, I think that this is part of a, and you're going to think that this is too crazy, but I don't think so at all. It's part of a program to mind control the population, basically. And it's headed for about the middle of November, where the Bolshevik Revolution took place. That's where they're headed with this. There's a very interesting book that you would be, and your wife would find interesting, and it's called The Secret Life of the Unborn Child. Wow. Wow.
I'm not familiar with that book, Richard. What's it about?
It's about how children are affected by their parents before they are born.
Oh, no.
Well, the concept of the parents' mind state is affects the unconscious mind of the unborn child.
You know, that is interesting. I am going to check out that book. That is interesting, Richard. Thank you for
about 30 years old. I think your wife would flip out about it.
Well, no, I'm definitely going to. I will check that out, actually. Because thanks, Richard. Because I've gotten the sense recently that the baby is kicking my wife more violently whenever my wife is giving me a hard time. So I sense the kid kind of getting upset whenever my wife is sighing at me or rolling her eyebrows or refusing to answer questions. See, my favorite response from my wife is, you know, honey, okay, she'll ask me for something. Okay, where is the bleach, whatever. Now, she could just tell me, oh, the bleach is there. Now, instead, it's a sigh and it's a big lecture about how I should know where the bleach is. Now, in the amount of time that it took her to sigh and comment about my lack of knowledge about something I admittedly should know about, this kid is beating up her insides like crazy. So I'm hoping that does ring true, that particular book. So we'll see. All right. When we come back, I will read your mail, frank.morano@wabcradio.com. That is frank.morano@wabcradio.com. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
Ten Fruit Gum Company, 1, 2, 3, red light. All right. If you want to be heard, you can email me if you don't want to call in. You can email me, frank.morano@wabcradio.com. We also have been getting a lot of nice snail mail. But if you'll notice, I have stopped until today. I stopped giving our P.O. box because I got very frustrated. About 4 or 5 months ago, I had about 4 or 5 great pieces of mail that I wanted to read. Actually, it's going back more than 5 months ago, but about maybe April. I had 4 or 5 great pieces of mail that I wanted to read. And then I remember we used to have this sounder when I was producing Curtis and Kubi about 16 years ago. And the sounder would go something like, letters. We get your letters. We get stacks and stacks of letters. Mail, 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 mail today. We better write it up. And then it was like that. And so I became obsessed with finding this sounder again. And I said to Christian, who was our producer at the time, I said, Christian, you have to search every piece of audio that we have here in every possible search term to find this thing. And sure enough, he finds nothing. Now, I have about 10 years worth of audio content on the laptop in front of me right now. I search every possible search term on this laptop, nothing. Then I'm a pretty good internet searcher as well. I search the YouTube for some version of this sounder. The only thing that was close to it that I could find was a similar song that they would play on the old Perry Como song. The old Perry Como TV show when he'd open a letter and it would go, Dear Perry. And it was similar to it, but it was not what I wanted. It was driving me crazy. So then I said, okay, maybe I'm not going to get this done today. I am then going to go home. I have an external hard drive with 16 years worth of audio on it. I am going to search this external hard drive inside and out to see if I have this memory. So I spent hours searching this external hard drive and I got nowhere. Then I said, okay, I'm going to reach out to our old engineer who was our engineer at the time. He'll know where I can find it. Nothing. I'm going to reach out to the producer who produced the show before me, and he'll know where I can find it. Sure enough, I try all those approaches, and Nothing. Zip, zilch, zero, nada. And I got angry. I got angry. So out of spite, I said, I'm not doing the segment. I'm no longer reading mail on the air. Lo and behold, like a gentleman finding an audio oasis in a radio desert, I am about three or four bourbons in at Joe Nolan's house Friday night, following drinking two or three glasses of wine at dinner that Joe Nolan was kind enough to purchase. And so I'm not quite sure if I'm hearing things soberly, but lo and behold, I hear the very same mail sounder that I had been looking for from 16 years ago. And apparently it's part of this collection of radio jingles that Joe and other people have. And I said, Joe, if you do nothing else for me ever, you've got to promise me you're going to send me that. He did. And that's why we are proud to bring back comes to us from Ellen, who writes via email yesterday. Just a note to tell you once again how wonderful your monologue this morning was. Your heartfelt emotions radiated from my little transistor. And I have to tell you that although it is a cliche, I actually felt a, quote, lump in my throat. The intensity of your sentiments swept over me as I listened to your words, and I felt privileged to hear you speak. It is lovely to hear the pride you have in your heritage, but not to the exclusion of your love and value at being an American. Of course, there can be a marriage of the two, and it's clear that you know and appreciate that. Thank you once again for all that you do. Hope you can get some sleep. Best, Ellen. You know, a lot of people like that Christopher Columbus commentary. Maybe we throw that in the Best Of show for this week, Matt. This letter is from a gentleman named Michael, and it has to do with my unique pronunciation of certain words and phrases. This is the subject, and it's one of those things, and I hate people that do this. I don't hate them, but I hate when they do it. The subject and the email are just a continuation. There's no delineation between where the subject begins and the email, you know what I mean. So this email is from Michael. He writes, stop the childish nonsense of purposely mispronouncing words. You're a father to be. Act like one. And then he specifically references Boogie Down Bronx and Brooklyn. Well, there you have it. Another county you heard from. Ricky writes via Facebook, hey, Frank, big fan. I heard you went to Ferraro's in Westfield on the radio. What do you rate the pizza? P.S. Love the show. I thought the pizza, and that's what I ordered there because I'm told the pizza it was good. I thought the pizza was excellent, very good. Not quite the caliber of a Staten Island or a Brooklyn slice. Maybe not even a good Manhattan parlor, but I thought it was very good. I thought it was solid. I ate the whole thing. I thought it was delicious. So I do recommend that place, Ferraro's in Westfield. The appetizers itself were great. We had the Cajun Gallimard. I think we got some burrata. It was great. This email here, very harsh. I can't repeat it all. This is from a woman named Maria Gomez, and it had to do with a wake I attended last week. Subject, what a sick F word, except she spells it out. What a sick F word. Looking for yourself on picture boards at a wake? You put Trump to shame. All right. Okay. This is from a gentleman named Brown. He writes, greetings. His absence is overwhelming. The subject was Charlie Finch. Where is Charlie Finch? He used to call the show a lot. Greetings. His absence is overwhelming. I fear to ask, did he succumb to his maladies? hoping not Brown. No, I still get like 4 or 5 emails a week from Charlie Finch. I could do with some fewer emails, but for whatever reason, he's decided he's taking a break from calling. I suspect he'll be back one day, and he'll be calling 5 times a day again, driving all of us crazy. He's doing fine. This is from a gentleman named Tom. This comes from an email today. There's no obligation or expectation of a reply to this. This was the first time I'd heard Frankie Russo after having read about him for so long in the Facebook group. I'd read that he was a loudmouth, but he seemed to be rendered speechless in the face of your vastly superior and wildly impressive ability to do what you do. That was neat to see after having read the awful things about him in the group and remembering that and remembering some other things. I'm assuming that was Frankie Russo sitting next to you from noon to one. The only time I heard him say anything, I didn't catch the coverage from the beginning, was when he made some angry, tasteless comment about the superiority of Europeans versus the Indians or something like that. Now, that was Frankie Russo, and I think that was the first time I met him, maybe the second. And, yeah, he was nice enough to me. I thought we had a good conversation. I really enjoyed the conversation that he had with Greg Kelly, where he was talking about Bill Pepitone, and Greg straightened him out that, you know, Bill Pepitone is essentially not a serious candidate and has no chance of winning, that essentially a vote for Bill Pepitone could be considered a vote for Eric Adams. And the only reason that's the case, ladies and gentlemen, is because there is no ranked choice voting in the general election. Had we had ranked choice voting in the general election, you could happily rank Bill Pepitone once and rank Curtis Sliwa twice. This comes from a gentleman named John. Subject, ping pong. Hey, Frank, I'm pretty good at ping pong. I'm like you. I love it. But I don't have a lot of people to play with. Let me know. Hey, John, if you're on, if you're in the neighborhood of where I live, I'd be happy to play with you as long as you're not weird and don't require a lot of entertaining. See, what I'm looking for is almost, and I hate to put it this way, I hate to put it in crude terms, I am looking for a ping pong prostitute. I am looking for somebody to come over that I can have minimal conversation with, play ping pong, and leave. Right. So I'm not looking for someone to entertain. And that's what's so great about Joe Borelli. He'll come over. He rides his bike over. Maybe we'll give him a cup of coffee and then he will play ping pong and he'll leave. That's what I'm looking for. Not a person that I have to entertain for hours. Just somebody that I could play a few games with. If that's you, yeah, please let me know. I'll be happy to play with you. And as long as you're not weird, I don't need my wife flipping out that I have more weird people coming. All right. Mike writes, this is in response to Dave, who was reading poetry, never boring poetry, the other day. Mike writes, hey, Frank, Dave the poet more than likely is on a watch list. I'll take the $12.95, buy some paint, put it on a wall. I'll take the $12.95. That's the cost of his book. Buy some paint, put it on a wall, watch it dry, never a dull moment. Another week of outstanding radio. And this is from a gentleman that won't give his name. He writes, subject is early news. You mentioned Tom Suozzi, a very removed and distant cousin of mine. We have never met. Let me pause here before I continue reading the letter. Why do I care? Now, I might care if you have some inside information about Tom Suozzi, if you know something about Tom Suozzi that no one else knows. But by saying he's a removed and distant cousin that you've never met, you don't know Tom Suozzi any better than I know Tom Suozzi. In fact, I would venture to say that even though I don't think Tom Suozzi knows who I am, I said hello to him today. I would guess that I know Tom Suozzi far better than you do. So why even mention it? But people feel obliged to tell you of their distant familial relations. All right, let me continue. You mentioned Tom Suozzi, a very removed and distant cousin of mine. We have never met. It's funny that you think he's mainline when he got his daddy's and uncle's job as Glen Cove mayor and again as Nassau County executive. He worked like a socialist. He was so far left that he lost his reelection twice. His past congressional campaigns were also very left-leaning. Now that he's running to save his job in Congress, he's claiming he's got common sense. He's power-hungry, afraid to get a real job, and not to be trusted. This is a reference to a conversation I had with Sid Rosenberg on the Bernie and Sid show yesterday. I did not say Tom Suozzi is mainline. What I said was he is supporting incumbent mayor of Buffalo, Byron Brown, as a write-in candidate, whereas a person he may be running against for governor next year, Kathy Hochul, is supporting the socialist, India Walton, who's won the Democratic primary. So you have a division in the Democratic Party, those supporting the socialist, India Walton, and those supporting the mainline Democrat, Byron Brown. Now, that's all I said. I'm not defending Tom DiNapoli. I have no interest in defending Tom DiNapoli. Not Tom DiNapoli. Tom Suozzi. See, I have DiNapoli on the brain because Suozzi beat Tom DiNapoli years ago in an electoral contest. And who knows? Maybe they'll face off against one another again next year. All right. If you want to be heard in tomorrow's letters, you can certainly email me at frank.morano@wabcradio.com. That's frank.morano@wabcradio.com. Or you can throw something in the mail. If you're like me and you like a good old-fashioned letter, I've been using the wax seal. Big thank you to Bridget and Robert Guzzi from Florida who sent me that as a gift. I've been using the wax seal every day. Or the seal wax. You can mail me a good old-fashioned snail mail letter, P.O. Box 1777, Attention Frank Morano, New York, New York, 10163. That's P.O. Box 1777, New York, New York, 10163. You believe there was I was watching CBS Sunday Morning a little bit on Sunday, and something like 45% of people I have the numbers here. This is from a CBS News survey. Most Americans have not sent or received a personal letter in more than 5 years. Can you believe that? The second highest percentage of people polled, 31%, fell into the category of 12 months or less of not sending personal letters. And there were a whole bunch of people under the age of 44 who have never sent a personal letter. So they found that women were also found to be more recent letter writers. So who knows? Maybe that's part of the reason that I should start identifying as a female. Not only can I get the access to all those cool toys in the toy store, but I'll be more comfortable with the people that are writing letters. That concludes today's mail segment. Thank you. 800-848-9222. Paul is in Manhattan. Hello, Paul.
Hi, Frank. I don't know if you remember a long time in the late 80s, David Letterman on a show that followed Carson, he used to use that sounder.
Yes, I do remember that. I do remember that. Yes.
Okay.
But I tried looking online, too. I couldn't find a good piece of audio that I could steal at the time. But now my attempted theft is being rewarded by Joe Nolan's audio generosity.
Okay. Did you come up with a fix for your the moldy shower curtain?
My wife has – so I've been extending the curtain the full length in the hope that it doesn't crinkle up and get moldy. But my wife has been – weekly spraying it with bleach, and that seems to have done the trick so far.
That'll do the trick.
Yeah, thank you for that suggestion again, Paul. All right, 800-848-9222. Well, we've heard that illegal aliens cannot be called aliens. They've got to be called, and they can't be called illegal. They've got to be called undocumented migrants. Now, that in and of itself doesn't make a lot of sense because they can still get documents. You can get a driver's license. You can get a New York City ID card. So what is undocumented about you? You're in the country illegally, but heaven forbid we say you're an illegal immigrant. Well, one celebrity is now saying that they don't think the term alien is appropriate, not for illegal aliens / undocumented migrants. Instead, for extraterrestrials. I'll tell you about it next. This is The Other Side of Midnight, straight ahead.
WABC, All American. Frank Morano, 77, WABC.
Sweet City Woman by the Stampeders. All right, this is the other side of midnight. I'm Frank Morano. Matt Sapienza is here. Matt, I know you're not nearly as down with pop culture and up on what's hip as our colleague Molly is, but now that Molly is a big shot who has been kicked upstairs and is looking down upon us from her ivory tower, where we have to talk to her secretary just to get an appointment with her, and since you're in front of me, I'll ask you the question. Do you know who Demi Lovato is?
Of course I do. Yeah.
Okay. What song does Demi Lovato sing, or what is Demi Lovato known for?
Like, I haven't followed much of her modern stuff, but I'm thinking back to like 10 years ago when she was a Disney Channel star.
Okay, but and I don't know if we have any of her approved songs in our approved music library, but you know, maybe we can play something so people get a sense of what Demi Lovato's song sounds like.
I'm on it.
But don't go crazy. Ryan, are you familiar with Demi Lovato?
Yes, I am.
What do you know of any of Demi Lovato's songs?
You know, honestly, I'm blanking at this current moment.
So you know what I love about celebrities these days? There's all these celebrities. I know Molly knows, so she's cheating by being up on what's hip. But, you know, there's all these celebrities that we know they're famous, but we don't know what they're famous for. John Legend, right? Everybody knows he's famous for being a musician. I don't think anybody can name three songs that he sang. George Hamilton, right? Everybody knows, especially if you're a little older, everyone knows George Hamilton is famous. No, nobody can name three movies that he's done. You name Love at First Bite, Godfather Part Two. It's a struggle to come up with the third. It's a struggle. Maybe you come up with Zorro the Gay Blade, but it's tough. So anyway, were you aware that Demi Lovato is now non-binary?
Yes.
Okay, so both of you are up on that. I was up on that, and I don't know any of Demi Lovato's songs. So I realized I referred to Demi Lovato as her before. I didn't mean to do that. It's just out of habit because she used to be her. They used to be her. So Demi Lovato has this new special out on this new series. Well, it's a special series out on the Peacock Network called Unidentified. And it's with her sister, with their sister, and with their best friend, Matthew Scott Montgomery. And Demi Lovato was on the Australian outlet Pedestrian.tv last week talking about extraterrestrials as they were promoting their new. See, I'm just going to say Demi Lovato because to me it sounds confusing to constantly say them. It sounds like I'm talking about more than one person. So I'm just going to say Demi Lovato rather than say they or them. It reminds me of the book. I don't know if you read the book Anthem by Ayn Rand. I know people are big Ayn Rand fans. I could take or leave some of her works. But in this book, it's told from the main character's perspective. And the whole, for reasons that are apparent if you read the book, the whole first two-thirds of the book, maybe three-quarters of the book, and I haven't read it since high school, the writer refers to himself as we. And I got to tell you, when I was reading this book, I was so flippin' confused because I thought they were talking about more than one person. And they weren't. It was just a kind of a literary device. That's how I feel talking about referring to people as they. So I'm just going to say Demi Lovato. So Demi Lovato spoke with Pedestrian.tv as they were promoting Unidentified, in which the special Unidentified is about uncovering the truth about UFO phenomenon. And Demi Lovato said, quote, "I think that we have to stop calling them," meaning extraterrestrials, "aliens, because aliens is a derogatory term for anything. That's why I like to call them ETs, extraterrestrials." The 29-year-old continued, "So yeah, that's a little tidbit, a little information that I learned." Now, if you look up the word alien, it comes from the old French alien and the Latin alienus, both meaning strange or foreign. It adds,
that the meaning, residing in a country not of one's birth, dates to the mid-15th century, while the meaning, wholly different in nature, is from the 1670s, and the usage, not of this earth, was first recorded in 1920. I have to say, and I'm looking forward to seeing this special, Unidentified, that Demi Lovato is doing, and big shout out to my brother Alexander for giving me his Peacock password, and now that I can tap into his Peacock and watch this special. I'm looking forward to seeing the special. It seems interesting, and it seems like they're doing some very good work here. In fact, I'm going to try and get them on, and when I say them, I mean the three people that are on the special, not one person, but three, in order to talk to them about this special and maybe promote it. But I completely disagree with Demi Lovato here. If you look at the definition of alien, all three words, all three definitions, the one from the 15th century, the one from the 1670s, and the one from 1920, they all fit extraterrestrials to a T, or shall I say, to an ET. Alien is a fine term for extraterrestrials. If you want to specify space aliens, that's good. So the interview was published last week, and it's generated a lot of controversy. It's generated a lot of steam. And Demi Lovato said, I really think that if there was anything out there that would want – I really think that if there was anything out there that would want to do that to us, meaning harm us, it would have happened by now. The term alien reinforces – any common misconceptions about UFOs that bother Demi Lovato, that they're harmful or that they'll come and take over the planet. Well, let me ask the question. How do you know if they're harmful or not? Now, I will concede that most of the evidence that we've seen of extraterrestrials suggests they're not harmful. But tell that to the people that have had sexual encounters with extraterrestrials, or I'll still use the term aliens. Tell that to the people that have had implants surgically implanted into them by extraterrestrials. I'll still call them aliens. And we spoke with Dr. Michael Sala, and based on his research, and he's an expert in the field of exopolitics, he says that there are both hostile aliens and non-hostile aliens. And look, what do you think the Space Force is here for? Of course, the Space Force wants to prevent the hostile aliens from being hostile towards it. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. 800-848-9222. Are you with Demi Lovato that we should stop referring to extraterrestrials as aliens? Or are you with me? 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Those of you that are holding, we will get to you after the top of the hour. Tomorrow's the big day, by the way. Tomorrow's the day Shatner is rocketing off into space. Very exciting. We'll be covering it here tomorrow. Dr. Sky is going to be here. We'll get his take on what exactly is going to be done up there in space and a whole bunch of other things. This is The Other Side of Midnight, 800-848-9222. Until next hour, keep asking questions.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. We will continue with your calls in mere moments. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-WABC. So I am not the biggest Justin Bieber fan. I have nothing against him. I just, his music, you know, I don't really, I've heard some of his songs that have been okay, but I've never really heard one of his songs that I thought, oh my goodness, I have to get that record and listen to it. But it's nothing, nothing against it at all. But Justin Bieber has a new music video out. And in the music video, I haven't seen it, but apparently the female lead is Diane Keaton. Yes, Diane Keaton, the Oscar winner from Annie Hall, from The Godfather, from First Wives Club, all sorts of other films. And in the video, apparently Diane Keaton plays Justin Bieber's grandmother. And in the video, following the death of his grandfather, Justin reconnects with his grandmother, goes out drinking and dancing and updating her dating profile. Just the sort of usual intergenerational pastimes for some people, I suppose. Now, it's difficult. My grandmother passed away a couple of years ago, unfortunately. We were very close. But it's difficult for me to imagine ever helping my grandmother with the ins and outs of Tinder, but that's why this is a video. And I also, you know, in the video Ghost, you can see Justin Bieber and Diane Keaton throwing back shots and dancing at a local bar. And this generated a lot of interest because when this video was first written about on the Drudge Report and in other media outlets, it wasn't immediate. This was before the video was released, but we knew that Justin Bieber had released this video and that Diane Keaton was going to be the female lead. And initially, it got a lot of people talking because folks didn't immediately realize that Diane Keaton was playing Justin Bieber's grandmother in the video. There was some thought, because the only scenes that had been released were them going out and dancing and doing shots, that maybe this was a romance between the two. So it's not the case, even in the video. But it got me thinking. I started researching famous, what they call, May-September romances, where one romantic partner in a relationship is significantly older than the other. And there are a surprising number, maybe not so surprising, number of May-September or May-December. It's May-September, right? May-September romances. And you have many of them. Chris Pratt and Katherine Schwarzenegger, for instance, are 10 years apart. That's not a big deal. But you have certainly, remember the age difference between Demi Moore and Ashton Kutcher. That was pretty significant. You had Lauren Bacall and Humphrey Bogart. I think Lauren Bacall was 19 and Bogey was in his 40s. You have Amal and George Clooney, 17 years apart, and they're married. You have all these stories of celebrities and regular people, Annette Bening and Warren Beatty, 21 years apart. Harrison Ford and Calista Flockhart, 22 years apart. And it got me thinking, and it got me talking with some friends, is there really a way that you can have a relationship, and I'm not just talking about a sexual relationship, but a true, meaningful, well-rounded relationship with someone who's 25 years or more younger or older? And I think there is. And again, you have famous couples like Michael Douglas and Catherine Zeta-Jones. Alec and Hilaria Baldwin, they're 26 years apart. Catherine Zeta-Jones and Michael Douglas are 25 years apart. I think it is possible. And, you know, when I was a younger guy, long before I was married, I would frequently date older women, women that were significantly older. I don't think I've ever dated anyone that was significantly younger. But because, you know, older women liked me because we had a lot of similar interests, because I could relate to a lot of the pop culture things they were into. I could talk with them about a lot of the things that they were into. And, I liked them because they seemed in some ways a lot more adventurous than younger women. So I am curious if you have had one of these May-December romances where you've been a part of a couple that is, and in fact, a caller even brought this up recently, that there was a younger woman, and I don't remember who it was, but a younger woman who was dating a much older man, and they maintained that it was only being done for money or for a certain lifestyle or celebrity, whatever the case may be. And the more research I did into this, the more I believe that that's not the case. I think you can have a relationship with someone that's significantly younger, but and have it work. Now, I don't know if I had a child, if I could ever date someone that was my child's age or younger. I would have a tough time with that, but other people don't. So I'm curious what your experience has been in this respect. 800-848-WABC. Oh, I remember it was Don McLean. Don McLean and Paris Dillon, they are 49 years apart in age. The American Pie singer Don McLean is 75, and he's dating a 27-year-old model. That's what a caller was responding to. That was it. I think you can still have a relationship and have it be a well-rounded one, in spite of the age difference, if that's just what's meant to be, if your kind of sensibilities jive with one another. Tell me what you think. Agree? Disagree? I would have, as I said, a tough time dating someone younger than a child, younger than my child. It just seems peculiar to me. 800-848-WABC. I remember the line, I think it was in, and I should have pulled the audio, but I remember the line in When Harry Met Sally, where Billy Crystal is talking about dating a younger woman, and he's telling Meg Ryan's character, if memory serves, he's telling her that he was talking with his date, and he asked where she was when Kennedy was shot, and her response to him was, "Ted Kennedy's been shot." So I remember Larry King, who had a fondness for younger women, was recounting a conversation that he had with someone in which he was saying, I don't remember if he was quoting someone or if he was saying this was his view. And I have to check in with my friend Bruce Charrett, who was Larry King's best friend, who we had on when Larry died. But Larry King was saying that he couldn't date someone that wasn't old enough to know who Adlai Stevenson was. And again, I can't remember if Larry was quoting someone or if that was his view. I think he was probably quoting someone. Tell me your take. How much of an age gap is too much? Is anything too much? Or can you have a 49-year difference in a couple as Don McLean and Paris Dillon do? 800-848-9222. But I actually want to revisit the alien subject we were just going over. So we will get to this. But first, let me say hello to Nina in Manhattan. Hello, Nina.
Hello. How are you tonight?
I'm well. Thanks, Nina.
Yeah. I enjoyed the parade today.
It oh, good. Beautiful. I'm so pleased to hear that. Good.
Yeah, but I'm calling because I saw Alien maybe 20 odd years ago when I was on my way to the Middle East, and when the plane left Paris and was going over Croatia, and the pilot even announced and showed us that gymnastic young lady home, and we were, you know, he was naming the different places when we passed in. So by time after that, we were going into a different country. And when we look back, when I look back, it was day, and then we are going into night. So here comes this flat, two aliens in the flying saucer. They were the one with the nut on the two side of the head and the bald head and the big, big green eyes.
Wait, you saw the actual alien?
Yes. I was sitting at the window. My husband was at the other side. I was sitting at the window. So most of the people were sleeping. So when I looked back, I saw everybody sleeping. So I have my shade up. So I saw them just in alongside the plane.
Did your husband see him also?
No, he was sleeping.
That's like that Twilight Zone episode with William Shatner. So what did the alien do when you saw him?
They were in their flying saucer. They were flying alongside the
plane. So you were looking out your window and you saw inside basically the window of the flying saucer.
Plane. And they have on their suit, double breasted, and the neck and the suit up to the neck, but it didn't have any sleeves. His hand was on the steering wheel of the flying saucer. So he came and I took my camera out and to snap them, and I just hear, like they said, don't even try it. And the plane, like, zoom, like they were messing with the engine. And I said, oh, my God, please, please, please.
Did the other passengers also see it?
No, I was in first class, and, like, I was at the first seat.
Well, see, it goes to show you, Nina, it pays to travel in first class. Nina, do you have a problem, as Demi Lovato seems to, with the term alien? Are you okay with referring to extraterrestrials as aliens?
When you said alien, what's the difference between alien and the they're armless, and I don't think they're out to hurt us.
All right, well, so maybe Demi Lovato's right. Maybe we shouldn't use that term. Maybe extraterrestrial is a more appropriate term. I don't think, and thank you for calling, Nina, I don't think there's a problem with it, honestly. But, you know, to each his own. 800-848-WABC. How old is too old to have a relationship with someone? How young is too young? Is 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 25? How about a 40-year difference in a relationship? Could you do that? 800-848-9222. Mike is in Manhattan. Hello, Mike.
Hi, how you doing? I was going to talk about an old, like the May-June romance, you know, that kind of thing.
Tell me, Mike. Lay it on me.
Well, so when I was 49, I got involved with somebody. I knew she was a few years older than me, and I had gone to Columbia College, and she mentioned she was at the Columbia College during the riots in 68. Now, I'd gone there 10 years after that, you know what I'm saying? So I figured maybe she's like, you know, 10 years older than me, maybe, like she's in her 50s, something like that. But I didn't realize at the time she wasn't just at Columbia as a student. She was at Columbia as a professor already in 68. So I found out later she was 64, 65.
Well, so what were you doing at Columbia at the time, Mike? You weren't a student at 49, were you?
No, I was. We just related. You know, like you mentioned, how can you relate?
Got it.
We had both gone to Columbia. I mentioned I got to Columbia.
Got it. Okay.
She went to Columbia.
How did you meet this woman, though?
Well, I met her at a poetry reading. She was a poet, and I'm a poet, too.
Got it. All right. Well, do you have any poems that you want to read before this call is over, just so we can be prepared for that?
I just recite a quote. Young Lochinvar has ridden out of the west, and all the brave Scotland, his speed is the best. That's from
I didn't realize that was one of yours, Mike. That's pretty good.
That's Alfred Lord Tennyson.
But go ahead. I'm sorry. So you're at this poetry meeting. You meet this woman.
Like I said, I didn't knew this until because she was a yoga instructor as well, and she had like a really tight body for any age. I mean, I'm saying she was all muscle, you know, for any age. And like I said, I wanted of all things, I wanted a bathroom. She had one of those, like, somebody sent her a funny card. But it was really a poster card, and she and I was like, it was her lifeline, you know, kind of thing, like a chart of her life. And I thought, oh my God, she's 64, you know, like. It was only 15 years older than me, but it seemed a lot at the time.
Well, 15 years can be.
In her 40s, and she was still in the 60s.
15 years can be pretty significant. I mean, that can be.
I had the other way, too. When I was 47, I had a 20-year-old girlfriend.
See, that's it. So you've been on both ends, right? So which did you find, and I'm not talking necessarily sexually, but in terms of having a relationship with someone.
Ultimately, it was somebody. I needed somebody my age or older, and I've been involved with more people older than me than younger. The one who was 20 ran off with somebody who was 20 years younger than me, and yet 10 years older than her. You know, they're going to think like she was going to run off with the younger guy sooner or later. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I'm in my late 40s. She's not even out of college yet, and it was just the opposite. It is somebody who was in their 60s. It was more like. Had more to relate to her, but also she wasn't going to run off with a younger man. You know, I was the younger man, you know, that kind of thing.
So what was the problem with both of them? Did you have, I mean, obviously it sounds like the younger one was, I don't know, maybe sowing her wild oats, but with the older one, why did things not work out with her?
Well, that was my fault because at the time I had another girlfriend as well.
So all right. Well, I mean, you're not married. You're entitled to have other girlfriends, right? But I guess she didn't think so.
I didn't tell her about it, you know, that kind of thing. And she's one of those people like also like, I just want to know. I think you're, you know, doing somebody else. You know, she didn't use the word doing either. But it was like, oh, no. I just want to know the truth. I just want to know the truth. Just tell me the truth. And I realized then that there was no point in telling the truth. I lied. And I said, no, there's nobody else. Just you. Beautiful babe, you know, just, you know, she's like, sigh of relief. Oh, thank God. Oh, thank God. It's like, you know, and I realized that had I told her the truth, you know, the kind of thing that is, that would have screwed everything up.
Well, I hear you, but it's always tough whenever you go into a relationship with, you know, where you're starting out with that degree of deception. But thank you for sharing, Mike. Appreciate it. 800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Talking about May, September. I think it's May, September romances. We've all seen it in motion pictures like The Graduate. Like The Summer of 42. I'm curious, have you ever been a part of one? And how did it work out for you? Do you think it is possible for someone to be in a relationship with someone 25, 30 years, 40 years even, older than them, and have things work out? That was the case with Larry King. I mean, he and his last wife were divorcing. So maybe it didn't work out, but they had a child together. They had a lot of good years together. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Richard is in Rockland County. Hello, Richard.
Yes, Frank. There's this one's going to bust your mainspring. There's a book out there called The Synchronicity Key, a very popular book written by Mr. Wilcox. But in it, he discusses the work of... about three major mathematicians. Mr. Flamenco is one of them. Helmer, I think, is the other one, and I can't remember the third. But it's about the appearance of certain events that have happened centuries before, almost exactly. And he points out that events in the Russian Revolution matched almost exactly the dates of the French Revolution, and they match the dates of the American Revolution.
Well, Richard, that is all interesting, but what does that have to do with what we're talking about?
Because certain people appear.
Oh, I see. So you could have a
reaction towards somebody basically because you've had a reaction towards them centuries before in another life.
I see. Well, that's interesting, Richard. I can buy that. That's interesting. 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. Eddie is in Nassau County. What do you think about all this, Eddie?
There once was an old maid from Duluth who would often sit and reminisce about her lost youth because she remembered the chances that she had missed at school dances and once in a telephone booth.
I think we ought to just rename this show the Poetry Show. We have some of the finest poets anywhere on the AM dial. 800-848-WABC. Robert is in Long Beach. Hello, Robert.
How you doing? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Your callers are great. I tell you, these guys keep me up.
Yeah, same here. Same here.
No, I traveled overseas to like Philippines, Thailand, Dubai, and it's pretty common. As a matter of fact, a lot of guys that retire, they go overseas to get a younger lady. They divorce, get tired of the woman they've had for 30, 20, 40 years, and they get some young little chickadee. And I understand there's a formula for it. I think it's 30 years, half your age plus 7. And that's supposed to be the ideal younger girl for you.
You know, somebody told me that recently. I think it was my friend Tommy told me that was the formula. So it's half your age,
plus seven.
And then my friend was joking that, that formula. Okay. Yeah. So this is what my friend texted me back in August when this came up. I think it was the Don McLean story that brought this up. He said he said the acceptable age difference is half your age plus 9. So a 56 year old can date a 38 year old. However, what my friend Tommy said is that money and fame can change that number a little bit.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, as we see, like, for example, with Donald Trump, was a lot of celebrities.
Well, so let me ask you about that, right? So I understand the example that you gave of people going to other countries and these guys trading in for a newer model. I get that. But can the younger women, someone who's 24 years old, for instance, can they really be attracted to a 52-year-old man, or is it just a function of, say, money or power?
In those particular issues, I think it's the cultural thing, and it revamps and vitalizes the gentleman or the woman. As a matter of fact, there's older women that go to Haiti or the Caribbean for younger men. And the cultural thing of revitalizing the older partner's life, I think that really helps, where we're not so superficial as we hear in the Western culture, where we're looking, you have to relate, and it has to be someone that's close to your age or something like that. Over there, they don't look at age. They look at a cultural, elderly, experienced individual who's a mentor in a certain aspect. Also, you know, unfortunately, that shows a lot of abuse. Also, I've seen some guys, they take advantage or they abuse the younger girl, you know, that they wouldn't be able to do over here. But in reference to that, I've known some friends that also retired. You know, I work with the government, and they would go over to Philippines or Thailand or Hong Kong, and they have no issues with a girl younger than their daughter or younger than their son or something of that nature.
Yeah, I would. That would be tough for me, honestly, Robert. Robert, thank you for the call. 800-848-9222. If you want to comment on this discussion or really anything else we've covered today as well, we've covered a lot of ground from aliens to aging. And we are just getting started here. 1-800-848-WABC. I do want to tell you that one of the things that we're seeing is quite troublesome is inflation. It's costing more to fill your gas tank. It is costing more to buy groceries. It's costing more to buy anything. And that is going to have a deleterious effect on your retirement if you have your money in a traditional retirement account. Thankfully, there is a company that can help you. That company is Legacy Precious Metals. So if you have your money sitting in a traditional retirement account, that money is being eaten away by inflation. If you have an existing retirement account, roll it into a gold or a silver IRA, and do it with legacy precious metals. Legacy is great. Gold and silver are hedges against inflation. Legacy is the company that you can trust because they give you unbiased counsel based on your individual situation. Contact Legacy Precious Metals today. Call them at 866-932-0635. That's 866-932-0635. Or you can visit legacypminvestments.com.
You're hearing things
on 77 WABC.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
Associate different songs with different points in your life and the moments in your life and around those moments that you associate them with today. I was listening to Rudy Giuliani yesterday, and I'm sorry I missed his interview with Gina Lola Brigida, because I got home and I wanted to stay up, but I hadn't slept. I had to sleep at least a little bit because I took my wife to a doctor's appointment yesterday, so I knew I had a very narrow window to sleep, so I didn't get to hear it. But I did hear the beginning of his commentary, and he was talking about when Gina Lola Brigida was the Grand Marshal, or was honored by the Columbus Day Parade back in 1991, and how Giuliani associated – it's 30 years ago, but he remembered that it was the day after the Clarence Thomas hearings. And it's funny – it was just funny to me listening to Rudy go on about how you associate different moments in your life with different memories. And so that is the case with that song. Now, I've known of that song for years, and I've always liked it. But 3 years ago, you know what an Atlantic City fan I am. 3 years ago, my wife and I, she was not my wife at the time. We were not even engaged at the time. But 3 years ago, we were there in Atlantic City for the opening of the Ocean Casino and the Hard Rock Casino. They both opened right next door to each other the same weekend. I think it was around June of 2018, and maybe July. But we both went, we both had a good time. And I was able to finagle access to the opening festivities at both hotels. And so the opening of the Ocean, they had this great, opening of the Hard Rock, rather, they had this great video where they played that song as a montage. And you see them building the hotel and renovating the hotel because it had been the Trump Taj Mahal. And it's really edited very, very cleverly. And Bernie and Sid were actually there for this as well, because Hard Rock was a big sponsor of WABC at the time. And then you have speaker after speaker going on and on with their opening remarks. Must have been a dozen speakers. Way too many. Way, way too many. And it's funny. So the Seminole Indian tribe, they are owners of Hard Rock. I don't know if they're the sole owners or if they're partners or what the story is, but the Seminoles are very big with the Hard Rock around the whole country, around the whole world, not just in Atlantic City. And so you had five or six, and again, I can't stress enough how long these speeches were going on for. You had five or six people all say, "And I'd like to thank the Seminole tribe." And my wife didn't have a chair, neither did I. But, you know, I guess maybe I had a little bit higher of a tolerance for standing at the time. And she's standing there just waiting for this to be over, because I told her as soon as the ceremony ends, we can go, because I wanted to stay there for the guitar smash. And because that's what they do when they open one of these Hard Rock properties, they smash these guitars. It's kind of cool. But I didn't get to smash one, but Bernie and Sid did. But so she's waiting and waiting and waiting, and she hears five or six speakers all say essentially the same thing, that I'd like to thank the Seminole Tribe. And then another speaker gets up, and the first thing the speaker says was, and I'd like to thank the Seminole Tribe. And my wife just sighs and turns to me and says, oh, yes, well, of course we've got to thank them. Heaven forbid they don't get thanked. And I thought that that was the funniest thing in the world. It was the funniest thing I'd ever heard. And I've never stopped thinking about it ever since. I still joke around with her about it. And I said to her, I said, because now I'll still just randomly, 3 years later, say, I want to thank the Seminole Tribe. And no one gets this. And I always said to her, if I ever win an award or something, like an Academy Award or some radio award or anything really, that the first thing that I would do is thank the Seminole Tribe. And that the only person in the world that would get that joke would be her. Now it's true of you as well. Now you'll get that joke just as she will. And it's funny, I always think of that whenever that song plays, We Built This City on Rock and Roll by Starship. Talking about whether or not it's okay to call extraterrestrials aliens, Demi Lovato says no. We're also talking about romantic relationships, not friendships, romantic relationships with people from different ages. How much of a gap is too much? 1-800-848-9222. Tommy is in the Bronx. Hello, Tommy.
Hello, Frank. I'm close to 70, and I have dated both a younger woman by 10 years younger than me and an older woman who I'm currently seeing who's 8 years older than me. And my father also married to my mom. There was an 8-year difference, and he was the younger. And I'll tell you, when I have a 38-year-old daughter, so when I look at women that are too young, I feel guilty that if I were to pursue them and get them to be interested in me, I would be denying them the beauty of having a relationship with and marrying a man of her age and raising children. I feel guilty about that.
Well, why do you feel guilty if maybe that's not what they want necessarily?
Well, they don't know what's good for them.
I see. Well, but you do.
I mean, how many years are you and your wife apart?
You know, I think we're very close in age. We're almost she's about a year younger than me.
Okay. All right. Because, you know, the whole idea, I have a 41-year-old son. So he just married a 32-year-old girl, and they want to have a child. Thank God he already has a child. You know what it is? I look at it in practical means. A form follows function. A young woman should be with a young man and have a young family. When you have a 20-year gap, you know, you're always going to be looking over your shoulder to see if the pool boy is sneaking in through a window. I mean, you can't. It's just, well, I confuse things because one girl was Russian and one girl was Jamaican. So maybe I would have, because I like older girls, like you yourself. You said you like older women. But if they're from another culture, it kind of makes things even more difficult. But that's, and could I say something about the alien issue?
Yeah, go ahead, please.
Okay. I don't know why we're allowing people to dictate to us as to what's right and what's wrong. In fact, you know, in the whole thing with the MAGA hats, and somebody, I think, in the New York Times wrote an article that when they would see these MAGA hats, they meaning the left, it would upset them terribly. And she went as far as saying, not only should we not wear a hat that says MAGA again or Make America Great, but we shouldn't wear that color red. Who the heck does she think she is? And so I happen to have a red Yankee hat. I wear it all the time for that reason. But I don't want people dictating to us. Like that woman that you mentioned, that you have to call them them.
Right. They identify as non-binary these days.
Non-binary, right. You know what? They're not going to determine the narrative. I am not going to stop referring to people as he and she. I'm not. All right, if it's in a work environment, but if I see someone that has every markings of a male and they come into my store, let's say I'm a merchant, and I say, excuse me, sir, and they flip out and they say, I'm a woman, and they start, you've seen those videos where they go berserk and they start knocking over displays in a store. It's man.
Well, fair enough. But Tommy, what do you say to what Demi Lovato says about not, I hate to use the term, but not alienating extraterrestrials by referring to them as aliens?
I think she's whacked out. See, I don't want them telling me how to think.
Yeah.
You know, they're aliens. They're from an alien strange land, like the old French and the Latin. So I'm going to have this person say to me, like this woman writing for the Times saying, oh, don't even wear a red hat because it's...
Well, that's just stupid. I mean,
well, it's the same thing.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I'm comfortable with alien, and I'm going to keep saying alien unless an extraterrestrial reaches out to me or calls in and says they don't want to be called alien. 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Nicole in Westchester. Hello, Nicole.
Hello. I'm just calling to say that this whole idea of, you know, 20-year age difference is okay if the person is okay with it. It's just absurd, okay? Men should not be with women 20 years younger than them and vice versa. That's just disgusting. There's nothing you have in common with someone that much younger than you. And it's just a sexual perversion. And anybody that wants to disagree with me, then they need to say that it's okay for their daughter or for their mother to do, or their sister to do that. And well, 9 out of 10 men are not going to want their mother, daughter, or sister doing that.
Are you married, Nicole?
Yes.
Well, what's the age difference between you and your husband or wife?
3 years.
3 years. Okay, so you guys are in the same ballpark. Now, have you known couples that have a significant age difference of the magnitude like you're talking about, 20 years?
Yes, and it never works out because ultimately you're just emotionally too far apart and too much growth happens between decades for you guys to sync up. So, you know, let's just be honest about what it is. It's a sexual driven desire. Give me a break.
Well,
like, I mean,
how about
that work out in Hollywood? It's money driven.
Okay, well, let's put Hollywood aside because Hollywood is crazy. But you don't think, for instance, maybe a 50-year-old man could have a relationship with a 30-year-old woman that wasn't based on some sort of a sexual fetish and they really did sort of just hit it off and have a special connection?
I mean, I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but let's be honest. Not long from, you know, the time they get together, the 50-year-old man is going to be a senior citizen and things aren't going to function and things are going to get tricky in their relationship. I mean, there's just, it just, to me, it's, it, and also, you know, maybe 30 and 50 is different, but when you talk about like a 50-year-old man with a 20-year-old girl, like, you're just scary to me. There's
well,
really
I'm with you.
That.
I'll be honest. I would have a tough time ever at any age dating a woman that's not old enough to drink. I couldn't do that, really. But I'm curious if it's very interesting. Look, I've never been in a regular relationship with someone that's 30 years age difference, I don't think. But it is interesting, Nicole. Nicole, I definitely appreciate your perspective and you calling. Thank you. If somebody disagrees with Nicole, I'd love to hear from them as well. If there's a 30-year difference in age, which you think can work, give me a call and let me know. 800-848-WABC. You know, in fact, maybe we did talk about this back in August because I'm remembering an episode of The Single Guy where and I remember telling this on air, so I'm sorry if this is repetitive for some people, but an episode of The Single Guy, which was a show on NBC back in the day, where he's dating a younger woman and he turns out to be about the same age as her father. And they end up having all of this stuff in common, similar movies and similar television show preferences, similar historical references. And they start talking about Welcome Back, Kotter. And then the woman he's dating says, oh, yeah, I've seen that show. It's on Nick at Night. The guy from Pulp Fiction is in it. And the reason it was funny is because she didn't know who John Travolta was, but for Pulp Fiction. And she didn't even know him as John Travolta. She knew him as the guy from Pulp Fiction. So, all right, 800-848-WABC. Michael in Virginia Beach has been patiently holding. Hello, Michael.
Hello. Before I go to the aliens, I remember Dynasty star, the beautiful blonde Linda Evans, talking about the relationship with her much older husband, whose name I forget at the moment, but she seemed to be very happy, even as a widow, talking about what a great relationship they had.
Yeah, and you know, I when we deal with celebrities, it is a different ball of wax, but I've met Bing Crosby's widow, Catherine Grant Crosby, and she was much younger than Bing Crosby, and she still talks about him in those same reverential terms.
Yes, yes. So it's entirely understandable. Abraham's wife, Sarah, spoke about him in those terms. And they were, I think, just 10 years apart, but he was a mind much higher than her own. But let me just talk about the alien situation for a minute here. Interplanetary visitors fall into two categories. There are those who are lords of the earth, and there are those who are not lords of the earth. Now, Jesus promised that all of Christianity would fall asleep on this issue, and that they would eventually wake up to the idea that he promised to send, in advance of his return, an interplanetary armada, which would eventually organize the wisest of the Christians from all four corners of the earth to prepare for his one world government. So after that preparation takes place, he shows up with an interplanetary armada that is so powerful, so dazzling, that the entire Earth's population is just paralyzed with awe concerning it. And I think that possibly Frank Morano may be the one host in the world who will facilitate the preparation of worldwide Christianity to understand this reality. They have all fallen asleep. They have all missed it. None of them understood exactly the orderly plan for reorganizing the earth, and that it would take place with the recognition that we have had people come to this planet who were born here, who died here, who were resurrected, like Ted Williams, like Bart Costo, who is not a Christian, says he expects to have happened to him through technology. And of course, Paul Allen, the co-founder of Microsoft, was a person in that category too. That's why he produced an atlas of the human brain and one of the mouse brain, which is about 2,000 times smaller than the human brain. So,
Michael, you've said quite a bit here. And first of all, I accept that responsibility as the one host that can bring about the worldwide Christian revolution, which you mentioned. And I'm surprised more people haven't fingered me as the person to do that previously. I've always felt that, you know, that might be my destiny. But you mentioned Ted Williams. So Ted Williams' head is frozen, but he hasn't been revived yet. So I'm not really sure how the Ted Williams example, or anybody that's been cryogenically frozen, how that fits in to the pattern of what you're saying. You lost me on that one, Michael.
Okay. Well, Bart Costo, the famous information scientist from California, will correct you. It is not cryogenically frozen. It's cryonically frozen.
Forgive me. I'm sorry.
Okay. But anyway, here's the point. Ted Williams and the greatest scientists today, like Paul Allen, recognize that The orderly nature of the universe tells us that it was team engineered, probably with computers so advanced that we can't even imagine what they are, but we would eventually catch up. And that is a prophecy in the Bible, that we would eventually catch up and become an information age. That prophecy was given to Daniel about 2,800 years ago. So when Ted Williams decided he would freeze his brain, he understood enough about the advance of technology, Murphy's Law, so to speak, that coincides with what the Bible says, that knowledge would increase to the point where we will understand the digital nature of the universe that makes resurrection possible. Now, the best scientists in the world, that's why you got to have Bart Costco on with Hugh Ross, the best scientists in the world understand that. We live in a digital universe. We are beings which are consist of a hardware body and brain and a software soul that can be uploaded, downloaded, preserved, and destroyed if the masters or the lords of the universe so decide to do that.
Well, Michael, you've given us all a lot to think about. Thank you. And hopefully I am the man who will bring about that Christian revolution. And for those of you that doubt me, or Michael, I should say, why take a chance? I think the safe thing for you is just to keep listening, right? Why miss a minute of this show in case that happens to be the show where I lead this worldwide global Christian revolution? So be sure to listen. If you ever miss a portion of the show, I do want to encourage you to listen to the podcast and subscribe to the podcast. If you search The Other Side of Midnight, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, on Google Podcast, on Pandora, and you can immediately get the show downloaded to your phone each and every day. Our podcast audience continues to grow, and you can help us grow by not only subscribing to the podcast, but by leaving a nice review, particularly if you have iTunes or whatever your platform of choice is. If you leave a 5-star review and also leave a nice comment, that helps us a great deal. All right, we're going to continue in just a minute, but first I want to talk to you a little bit about Life Change Tea. Life Change Tea is terrific, and it is all natural. I could tell you, it's funny, in the Facebook group, and you can join the Facebook group at Morano Radio Fans and Haters. That's Morano Radio Fans and Haters. Person after person was all saying the same thing. How does Frank look so energetic and refreshed at noon? And even though he's been up all night, the answer is Life Change Tea. I drink 2 glasses of this stuff every day. And this is like it's like having a motor attached to your soul, because you have such energy that you can do all these things. I can't recommend this stuff more highly. I drink it every day, and I think you'll like it too. It's all natural. It's herbal. Gives you a ton of energy without caffeine. No fillers. No GMOs. It's completely organic. It's a mild cleanse, a daily detox that cleanses you from the inside out. Their slogan is, the tea that makes you go. You can read the testimonials for yourself at getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. And you can use the promo code Frank when you order. If you do that, if you use the promo code Frank when you order, you will get to enjoy free shipping anywhere in these United States. And Ronnie McMullen just threw in a special deal for us. He's the head honcho over there. Getthetea.com. If you use the promo code Frank on any product that you buy there, they'll take an additional $5 off. Getthetea.com, promo code Frank.
WABC. This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
The tables are empty, the dance floor's deserted. You play the same love song, it's the 10th time you've heard it. That's the beginning just one of the clues. You've had your first lesson in learning the blues. The cigarettes you light, one after another, won't help you forget her and the way that you love her. You're only burning.
Learning the blues, the great Frank Sinatra. That, you know, I don't know if you heard John Catsimatidis on the broadcast I did yesterday at high noon when the two of us were sitting in for Charlie Kirk. And John said he made a very special announcement that on December 12th, which is going to be Frank Sinatra's birthday and Johnny Russo's birthday, by the way, that they're going to do a special show at Patsy's Restaurant here in Manhattan, all about Frank Sinatra. So I'm definitely going to try and be at that. I don't know the details or anything like that, but if you're a Sinatra fan, I would certainly mark your calendar to make sure that you can be there at Patsy's. You know, I'd like to get the Patsy's grandson, Sal, on this show to share some good Frank Sinatra stories, because I've heard a number of stories that he's told about Sinatra and Sinatra's time at Patsy's over the years. And it's just fascinating stuff. Fascinating stuff. So I'm looking forward to having him on the show. 800-848-9222. Bob is in Maywood, New Jersey. Hello, Bob.
Good morning, Frank. I just wanted to let you know that my sister is 77 years old and her husband is 52. They've been married for 33 wonderful years, and they are absolutely madly in love with each other.
Well, I love hearing that. That's great. And I'm a believer that that can happen. What was your reaction to hearing Nicole from Westchester, who said that that's just not possible, that it's got to be just a sexual fetish when there's that big of an age difference?
I was very surprised because, I mean, I'm in a relationship. I'm 74 and my partner is 28.
Really?
Yes.
Good for you.
And it's absolutely wonderful.
So, yeah. So your response to Nicole, if she's listening, what would you say to her? I'm sure she still is.
She has an awful lot to learn. She really needs to open her eyes and see that regardless of age, two people can truly be in love with each other.
Well, that's wonderful. That's great. Good for you, Bob, and good for your sister. Thank you. 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. Hey, I could use your help in something. I have agreed tentatively to attend Marlena Shivo, who's a regular guest on this show. In fact, maybe we'll have her in this week at some point. I have agreed to attend Marlena's Halloween party at her house at the Jersey Shore the weekend of Halloween, which is October 29th. But I don't really have a costume. Now, my wife has this costume picked out for her. The last time I dressed up was about 12 years ago, and I think I was Curtis Sliwa. So I think I still have the Guardian Angels jacket and beret that I could wear. But I don't know. I feel like there are going to be too many people that try to be Curtis this year because he's running. I could use a suggestion for a Halloween costume that's A, super easy, B, that's clever, and C, that I can put together quickly. So if you have a thought, email me, frank.morano@wabcradio.com, or call me. 800-848-9222. Until next hour, your influence counts, so use it.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
I'm not tired yet.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. 800-848-WABC. The last thing I will say about this age situation is, you know, somebody who was in a relationship with someone who was very different than in terms of age than them was Jerry Seinfeld. Jerry Seinfeld's wife is 50 years old, and Jerry is Jerry 67 years old. So he's 17 years different. And I think his previous girlfriend was, I think this is going back many years, but I think at one point he dated a teenager. I think he dated a 17-year-old, if I remember correctly. And the only reason I mention that, Jerry was 38 and he dated 17-year-old Shoshana Lonstein. Now, you know, their relationship was a friendship after they met in Central Park, and they held off on being romantic until Shoshana turned 18. But they're not together anymore. But the point is he was in one of these relationships. And so it caught my eye over the weekend that Jerry was on one of these late night shows on Thursday night. I believe it was the Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon.
Right? Yeah.
So it was a Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. And, now we're in an era where everybody has to apologize for things they did a long time ago. And apparently Jerry Seinfeld is no different. He issued an apology for some conduct that he was involved in the year 2007. Let's hear what Jerry Seinfeld had to say.
And then I make a movie with a B all those things take time. And I apologize for what seems to be a certain uncomfortable, subtle sexual aspect of the B movie with really was not intentional. But after it came out, I realized this is really not appropriate for children.
No, it's not interesting.
Because the bee seemed to have a thing for the girl.
Yeah.
You know, and we don't really want to pursue that as an idea in children's entertainment.
So there you have it. There's Jerry Seinfeld talking to Jimmy Fallon. And for those of you unfamiliar with the Bee movie, he plays a bee and the female lead is a human. Here's a little bit of Bee movie.
You like jazz?
He's being romantic with a human. So there you go. 800-848-9222 if you have any reaction to that. But there was a story on a much more serious note that I found incredibly eye-opening. And I had it on my list yesterday because I finally got to read it over the weekend. And I linked to it on my Facebook page, and I'd encourage you to read it. It's facebook.com/MoranoFan. That's facebook.com/MoranoFan. And the only reason I didn't do it yesterday is, one, we ran out of time, which is why sometimes I like these shows where we don't have any guests, because I can run through a lot of different things quickly and at the same time give you an opportunity as the caller to be heard. But I didn't have a solution to the problem, because there's a big problem in this continent right now. And I didn't have a solution to it, and I still don't. But it was such an interesting story that I feel obligated to bring it to your attention. And it's from the Washington Post. Let me ask you the question. Matt, let me ask you, just because you're a pretty good barometer of what people know and don't know. What you are aware that people come into the country illegally from time to time, right? You're aware of that.
Yeah, I'm aware of that.
So you're aware that sometimes they'll have a smuggler smuggle them across the border.
Yeah, like in a pickup truck or something of that regard.
Any number of ways. Do you know if you're an adult and you're caught smuggling someone illegally into the country, what happens to you? Do you know what the penalty is?
The only thing that I could guess is immediate deportation.
Well, I mean, you're not an American citizen to begin with. So, I mean, any other thoughts as to if you're an adult, what would happen?
I'm drawing a blank on this.
All right, well, take a guess. What do you think a fair penalty is?
The only other thing that I would have in mind is they'd be fined a hefty penalty. Right?
It's a little stiffer than that. So let me ask Ryan. Ryan, any thoughts? If you're an adult, say a Mexican or somebody from Central America that's caught smuggling people into the United States, what is the penalty? Any idea?
Isn't it like you would get detained for a little bit and then they would determine whether or not what would happen to you? Or
No. Both good guesses, but it's actually much harsher than that for adults. Now, that's one of the reasons I want to bring this story to your attention, because I feel like a lot of people don't know what the situation is and why. So if you're an adult, someone over the age of 18, and you bring – if you smuggle an illegal alien into this country and you get caught, even if you're not an American citizen, you're arrested and you're – and if you're convicted, which these people generally are, you get an instant 10-year prison sentence. 10-year prison sentence. Now, that's pretty harsh, which – and I think it's good that it's harsh, because it will, you know, make sure that people don't smuggle – folks into this country. Now, here's the question. And this is something that I was totally ignorant of, and I like to think that I pay pretty close attention to this stuff. What is the penalty if you're a child and you smuggle migrants into this country? Well, believe it or not, Matt's first answer is pretty close to what happens if you're a child. If you're a child under the age of 18 and you smuggle someone into this country and you're caught, whether you're smuggling one person or 30, they just send you back to Mexico. That's it. And now they send you pretty far down in Mexico, not right across the border. But what this has led to is these cartels and other groups using children as smugglers of migrants. So it tells the story of this boy, Antonio, in this Washington Post article, which I linked to and I encourage you to read. This video, it's really beautiful article. I mean, it's terrible, but it's really well done. Antonio has been guiding illegal aliens from Mexico into the United States for the past 5 years, since he was 12 years old. He's made thousands of dollars doing this. So usually you get a bonus for every person you get into the country, and you get paid when you get back. And if you get caught, you just try again. So you have the situation where this young man, he leads a single file line of migrants towards the border. He's given them instructions, hold hands. He's filming them as they move almost silently through the brush as they wade through across the Rio Grande and as border agents chase them down a dirt road. Then he turns the camera on himself, filling the screen with a wide, toothy smile. He's a teenager. Antonio guided his first group of whatever you want to call them, migrants, into the United States when he was 12 years old, and now he's 17. And he's one of the most prolific, what they call juvenile smugglers, along a section of the border that's full of them. And he is notorious among the Border Patrol agents of Brownsville, Texas, who keep a list of the 10 most successful juvenile smugglers on the wall of their office. Some have been caught more than 100 times. Antonio, who's always cautious, has been caught up to 15 times. The Border Patrol, they know him. They say he knew what he was doing. His goal was to win. And since last October, U.S. immigration agents have made more than 1.5 million migrant apprehensions across the southern border, the most in more than two decades. Gee, what changed since last October, I wonder. The Biden administration has pledged to dismantle the networks that transport migrants, which they have not done. But the smugglers at the heart of one of the world's largest migrations are children. They're boys who grow up on the southern banks of the Rio Grande. They earn about $100 for each migrant they get across. So for a lot of them, it's a part-time job, a hole in the border economy that they can fill. Some become famous. They're the subject of rap songs in Mexico. Images of their exploits are shared wildly and widely on social media. And their success is made possible by this one quirk in the U.S. immigration system that I just mentioned. You don't have to worry about getting caught if you're a kid. It's a longstanding practice. The Justice Department does not prosecute Mexican minors for smuggling migrants. When the boys are apprehended, they're put in white Border Patrol vans and expelled to northern Mexico, where they're free to escort more migrants across the border, sometimes within hours of being released. How crazy is that? So this makes them valuable tools for these criminal groups that control this human trafficking. And this policy that's meant to protect the boys, meaning non-prosecution, has made them targets for cartel recruitment. So you might ask, what happens when these kids turn 18? Well, when the boys turn 18, they're no longer insulated from prosecution, so most of them stop. If they're caught, as I said, you're sent to a U.S. prison for a decade. That's when the cartels steer them towards new roles. As the boys approach their 18th birthdays, the groups recruit them for more dangerous work, drug trafficking, for example, sometimes even hitmen. And there have been months when Antonio smuggled migrants to Texas almost every day. He's memorized the curves in the Rio Grande, the way it narrows near Montsees Road, the dense brush around Brown Park, how you can cross the river by leaping between rocks in one particular aspect of it. He can get over the border wall in less than a minute. He's learned to use Google Maps to navigate his way between Border Patrol checkpoints. On Facebook, he changed his profession to smuggler. He's quoted in the Washington Post as saying, in the beginning, it was like a game. You feel the adrenaline rush. You jump over the wall, you run away from the agents, you hide, and at the end of it all, you get paid. So Antonio turns 18 in February, and he sees two options. First, he's already being pressured by one of the cartels to move from crossing people, which is what they call smuggling, to a riskier role. They've loaned him an assault rifle, and they've asked him to start moving drugs. Or the second option is the local government, recognizing the number of local children drawn to smuggling, has launched a program to extricate them from the business. It offers sessions with a psychologist, a path to a high school diploma, and jobs to replace part of their smuggling income. They've even created a soccer team for these kid smugglers. And some of these kids, they chronicle in the article, which, again, I want to stress that you really should read, that some of these kids have actually come out of their life of smuggling, and they've used soccer as a positive way to get them on the straight and narrow. So I'd love to know from you what you think the solution is here. Now, obviously, I think we need a whole broader approach to immigration security. And this was one of the first things that attracted me to Donald Trump as a personality, as a political personality, rather, is I'm all for a wall. I think we need not only a wall, but I would be in favor of taking the military out of the 100 countries that we have the military in all over the world and actually using them to back up the border patrol at the southern border. All for that. So I think we need a whole new approach. But this particular problem of children being tasked with smuggling migrants is something that I confess I didn't know about and I hadn't thought about. And I'm curious what you think could be done about this. 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. Now, I am not a big proponent of throwing more people in prison. I am for letting more people out of prison on the whole. And that being said, I'm wondering if part of the solution needs to be prosecuting these kids, even if they're under the age of 18. I had a friend, a close friend, who used to work here, a news anchor, George Weber, great guy, who was murdered by a 16-year-old. Now, in New York, the law says that if you commit a heinous act like murder, even if you're 16, at least at the time this was the case, I've lost track to what we've done to decriminalize murder, basically. But at the time, if you were convicted at the age of 16, you were tried as an adult and sentenced as an adult. I'm wondering if you're 17, 16, 15, 14, maybe you should be sentenced and prosecuted like an adult, just like some of these other folks. Now, I'm not ready to make that jump, but I have to think that that would disincentivize these young people from smuggling people into this country. Some of these boys make as much as $1,000 a day, which, of course, many of them use to spend on drugs and other things. Some of them use it to support their family. So it's a really interesting article. Let me give credit to the writer. I tweeted it as well. The reporter for this story is a gentleman named Kevin Seif, who did a great job talking to Border Patrol people, talking to these child migrant smugglers, and doing a lot of research and publishing a lot of video. It's one of the best articles I've read in a long time, and it's caused me to rethink a lot about our immigration approach. And I'm curious, now that maybe you, if you weren't aware of this, what you think maybe can be done about this situation. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. And I also want to encourage you to start thinking about inflation. Inflation is here, and it's here to stay. It is not transitory, and it is something that is a big, big problem. And that's where legacy precious metals comes in. The national debt is unsustainable. The disastrous economic policies that are coming out of Washington and the Federal Reserve are even worse. And they're going to make the problem even worse. So if you have your money sitting in a traditional retirement account, it's getting eaten away by inflation. But there is a solution. Legacy precious metals. So if you have an existing retirement account, you can roll it into a gold or a silver IRA, and you can do it with Legacy Precious Metals. A Legacy is the company that you can trust, because while gold is a hedge against inflation, Legacy is the company that you can trust, because they give your situation and your case their unbiased information and counsel based on your individual situation. Contact Legacy Precious Metals today. Write this number down. Call 866-932-0635. That's 866-932-0635, or you can visit legacypminvestments.com. That's legacypminvestments.com. Let me say hello to Tom on the Garden State Parkway. Hello, Tom.
How you doing? This Mexico thing, like you're talking about, I mean, it's been going on since, I mean, I'm 58, since I can remember reading the paper. I mean, and we know there's no government down there because they're not doing anything. I mean, what's the chance of putting another star on the flag and stop wasting money with a wall and maybe join us? I mean, Ford's down there making cars. I mean, fix the government, get rid of the cartel. Make it a hospital place to live.
So that's interesting, Tom. And I think that, in 94, when they started when they passed NAFTA, that was the eventual goal in terms of having us, even if not politically, at least economically, be essentially one nation, United States, Canada, and Mexico. I don't know if that's wise, because essentially then you're taking all of Mexico's problems and you're erasing any border into this country, and you're bringing them all here. I mean, Mexico doesn't.
The only reason why they're leaving is because the cartel. It's not, they can't live there. Wipe them out with our military. Take over the government. I mean, we tried to do it in Afghanistan. This is a lot closer. Be a lot cheaper, and make it a place.
Well, you saw how well it worked out in Afghanistan. I don't know, Tom. I think you know, I think that the less expensive solution and the one that's better for the people that are currently American citizens would be just stricter border protections and maybe doing something about these child migrant smugglers. 800-848-9222. That's 800-848-WABC. Steve is in Manhattan. Hello, Steve.
All right, Big Frank, and let's not forget talk show hosts who get real popular, make a lot of money, and they trade their wives in. You know, that's been going on lately. And before I get to the meat and potatoes, I'd just like to tell people, if yesterday morning they heard me on the Bernie and the Sid show give a rousing speech about the Bronx yesterday morning. I hope everybody heard that because it was important to say that. But the thing is now, there's a war going on, right? But the problem is only one side knows what's going on, and that's the Mexicans. They know they're piling drugs in here. They're bringing drugs in. You could say that group controls the border. I don't want to give them any fancy names. They're just taking advantage that the border is wide open. There really is no border down there, and they're making money with the drugs, obviously bringing people in here, charging them. And if we brought them, if real patriotic Americans were in charge of that border, that would come to an end in a day. You have the military down there, let the Border Patrol do their job, and they would be out of there. It wouldn't even exist anymore. But unfortunately, that's what we have going on inside this country. But I just want to – you still there, Frank?
I'm listening to you, Steve.
Okay, great. I just wanted to make sure you didn't fall asleep like Francesca. But the thing is, I just want to – you know something? When we talk sports, if we did that every week, you would start to remove chunks – of FAN's audience. Like if I called in every night at the same time we talk sports, you would remove chunks of their audience. But I just want to give a little education to the people out there. I know Columbus has been taking a hard time. He's been given a hard time, but it's nonsense. There's three men out there who are responsible for Western civilization. Obviously, Christopher Columbus, he discovered the New World. Obviously, George Washington, he's the first guy ever to shake off an empire, turn down the kingdom, survive smallpox amongst other diseases. And Charles Martel. And Martel is not talked about. I hate to bring him up because they're going to go after him too. But he's the guy in 732. He's a Frenchman, very popular with the French. He stopped the Islamic invasion coming up through Spain. He stopped it cold. It was a brutal war, but he stopped it. That stopped Western Europe and probably all of Europe from becoming Islamic.
All right, Steve. So I'm guessing we have no solution on the childhood migrant, the child migrant situation. So that's fine. We get in filibuster mode. It gets a little tiresome. 800-848-9222. If you want to comment, that's 1-800-848-WABC. Hey, you can also find me on Twitter at Frank Morano. That's Frank Morano. And I'm on Facebook as well. Facebook.com/MoranoFan. And if you want to email me, including an email that might be read on the show, you can email me at frank.morano@wabcradio.com. That's frank.morano@wabcradio.com. I am soliciting your suggestions for a Halloween costume. So far, I've gotten a couple of suggestions. I'm not crazy about anything that people have sent in. Well, maybe we'll just skip the party. Yeah, I don't know. The closer we get to this Halloween party, the more I'm thinking maybe we skip it. I don't know. 800-848-WABC. We're going to give you an opportunity to win $1,000 in just a minute. If you are the seventh caller to 800-848-9222, you can play the $1,000 minute. If you've never been a contestant before, the way this contest works is if you are able to answer 10 questions in 60 seconds or less correctly, then you will be $1,000 wealthier. If you're not, if you get a question incorrect or you let your time run out, then you're out. You're out, Tom. So if you want to participate, give us a call now, 800-848-9222 to be the seventh caller to play the $1,000 minute. We'll play in mere moments. We'll be right back. That's Elton John singing Don't Go Breaking My Heart. Elton John and Kiki singing Don't Go Breaking My Heart. This is The Other Side of Midnight with you until 4 o'clock, excuse me, until 5 o'clock this morning. Juliette Huddy is back today. She was off yesterday, so we are going to be reunited today, which I'm looking forward to. And we've got a ton of news to bring to your attention. News from the parade alone was pretty significant. But first, it's time for one lucky listener to have an opportunity to win $1,000 if they can answer 10 questions in 60 seconds, because it's time for
The Other Side of Midnight presents
It's the $1,000 Minute. Answer 10 questions correctly in 1 minute, and you could win $1,000. Here's your host, Frank Morano.
All right, let's say hello to Gino in Brooklyn. Hello there, Gino. How are you?
Hey, what's up? I got a question. Can I skip a question and come back to it as long as it's within the minute?
Yes, but you can do that, but you're not going to get any more questions. You're still going to have to answer that question eventually.
I get it, but why get hung up on one and move to the next?
Well, you know what my fear is with that though, Gino? And again, I guess we'll have to talk with our management about this. But my fear is if you do that, then you'll be in a position to look up the answer and then come back to it after you've looked it up.
Oh, okay.
Well, you see what I mean?
Okay.
Well, so I will clarify that with management. But my thinking is that you're not going to be able to go back for that reason. I mean, Matt, what do you think? I mean, that makes sense, right? What's your ruling?
It's 60 seconds, though. I mean, how quick do my brain and my fingers work?
Well, I don't know about you. I could look up things pretty quickly. All right. Well, so yeah, for now, my answer is going to be no on that one, Gino. But it's a good question. You might help a future contestant.
Okay.
We'll work with management and try to get the Gino rule in effect.
There you go.
All right. So, Gino, you ready to play?
Yes, sir.
Okay, here we go. What planet do you live on?
Earth.
Name one of the Italian-American talk show hosts here on 77 WABC.
Host Joe Piscopo.
What does D.C. in Washington, D.C. stand for?
District of Columbia.
On the original Star Trek, who is the captain of the Enterprise?
James T. Kirk.
What basketball player has scored the most points?
In a game or in a season?
In a career.
Michael Jordan.
Unfortunately not. You're on a roll. It is Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Gino. Okay. Good job. Not only good job answering questions, but you answered them at a very good pace, I thought. So, grab Gino's information if you would, and get it to the powers that be so that we can send Gino a cap, a WABC cap. I understand my caps are still on back order, but you can get a lot of the other great merchandise and go to WABCRadioStore.com. They have caps from the Cats Roundtable, from Joe Piscopo, from the Sundays with Sinatra show, from Cousin Brucey, and it's a great WABC store that we have there. And I definitely recommend perusing it. We'll play this again tomorrow if you want an opportunity to win then. Now, time for the WABC clip of the day. Today's clip comes to us from the Cats Roundtable, which you can hear on our radio station every Sunday morning from 8:30 to 10. And that's a show that I'm very privileged to be on as well, from 8 to 8:30. And you can check out the podcast at catsroundtable.com or just go to wabcradio.com. Here is the clip from this Sunday's edition of the Cats Roundtable.
What is going on with the economy? Tell the American people what's going on.
Well, what a week this was. So we have so many things going on. One is we got kind of a mediocre jobs report. It was a little bit disappointing, not hugely disappointing. Then the other issue is this showdown on the budget. And it was a consequential week. Now, Mitch McConnell agreed controversially to give the Democrats until mid-December to figure out how they're going to pass their bill and to increase the debt ceiling. They did a two-month extension on the debt ceiling. Democrats just do not have the vote to pass this thing.
There you have it. That's Steve Moore, a noted economist who you can also hear on More Money on the weekend here on WABC. And if you missed any portion, not only of that interview, but a lot of the other great interviews John does, you can catch them all at WABCradio.com. And I don't know if you heard the beginning of the show, but the caller mentioned last night the Cats at Night show, the discussion, which got rather heated at times, between Johnny Russo and Al D'Amato. And I'm sorry I didn't have an opportunity to edit it earlier, but it really – and it's a little long for our purposes, but it really is worth hearing. If you want to go back and listen to it, you can go to WABCradio.com. It was a fascinating discussion, and it's the kind of thing you really only get on live radio. There's one thing that I did want to mention. It's in today's New York Post. A headline, solar storm expected to hit Earth could make northern lights visible in New York. Now, I'm going to revisit this tomorrow with Dr. Sky, who's going to join me in the 1 o'clock hour. But the sun is expected to wreak some havoc on our planet on Monday with an enormous solar flare. This is for real. This is not science fiction or conspiracy theories. And I may try and get Dr. Peter Vincent Pry on tomorrow to talk about this as well. This enormous solar flare could disrupt power grids, affect spacecraft, and make the northern lights visible in New York. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration has issued a G2 or moderate geomagnetic storm watch due to the anticipated arrival of what's called a CME, coronal mass ejection. And again, I'm going to get into this in a big way tomorrow at 1. But it is interesting. You should plan your Monday accordingly. Among the possible effects of this sudden flash of increased brightness from our star 93 million miles away are power grid fluctuations, voltage alarms at higher latitudes, spacecraft orientations, irregularities, and increased drag on low Earth orbiters. But the most spectacular outcome of this massive CME could be the aurora borealis or polar lights that are normally visible in the high latitude regions of the Earth, but may be visible as low as New York to Wisconsin to Washington State. Now, it's pretty neat. It's pretty interesting, I think. And I'll tell you, I ordered, after our last conversation with Dr. Sky, I ordered a brand new set of binoculars. And I am going to, again, I'm not going to look forward to the power disruptions, but I'm going to look forward to breaking out these binoculars and checking out the aurora borealis on Monday, if that's the case. And if I've said this once, I've said this 1,000 times. Please, for your own sake and the sake of your family, because we now know there could be power fluctuations on Monday, make sure you have a battery-operated radio. If you lose power, you could lose television, you could lose internet, you could lose cable, make sure you have a battery-operated radio because you don't know what's going to happen. 800-848-WABC. Let me say hello to Jeff in Jersey City. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, Frank, thanks for taking the call. I want to say to you for the last time, because it's a done deal. Biden eliminated Columbus Day, so I will be the last one to wish you a happy Columbus Day, Frank.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. Yeah, well, what if the caller after you wishes me a happy Columbus Day?
Do you think that'll happen? I hope so. Anyway, a couple of quick ones. You know, time is valuable, so I'll let you go. And talking about time being valuable, the mayor's race, it pains me to watch what's going on as I watched it the last election. And there's one guy that's doing it. And the guy loves the city, but he's mixed up. And he has a low political IQ. He's a great city detective. But his politics, maybe a kindergarten kid, He's advising Eric Adams. Eric Adams has the Al Sharpton advice. And we know Eric Adams is a racially divisive person. And this is very recently, Frank. This is not like something old as people talk about. Well, maybe when he was a cop, this. No, this is this year. This was in the primary election. This guy hasn't changed. And he was writing the BLM thing with de Blasio in the street. And to watch this guy, if he is elected, I mean, and Bo Dietl, you know what? His face should be up there with Bill de Blasio because he helped get de Blasio elected. And now he's going to help Eric Adams.
Well, how did he? I mean, I'm no fan of Bo Dietl, but how did he help get Bill de Blasio elected?
How did he get Bill de Blasio elected? He ran against him. And the only one that voted for Bo Dietl was one vote, him. He's the only one that got
the
vote.
But again,
and you know what? Albanese was 1-4.
Right. Jeff, I remember. I worked on the campaign. But de Blasio got 70% of the vote. So how did the 1% of the vote that Bo Dietl got, how did that translate to getting de Blasio elected?
Because what he should have done long before the election started was saying, I'm not qualified to be a candidate. I'll help somebody else run against de Blasio because I have no political skill. And instead, he said, I watched it. I watched what he said to Sal Albanese, who is a gifted politician and a very bright guy.
Yeah, I hear you, Jeff. I'm no fan of Bo Dietl, but I don't think you could blame him for Bill de Blasio. I mean, that makes no sense to me. I mean, you blame the people that voted for Bill de Blasio. Maybe you even blame Anthony Weiner. Maybe you blame the person that came up with that Dante commercial. But can't blame Bo Dietl. 800-848-9222. Vinny's in Massapequa. Hello, Vinny.
Hello. How you doing, Frank? Just wanted to let you know about the Northern Lights. You don't need binoculars. It's like looking at shooting stars. You wouldn't use binoculars to look at shooting stars. It's
so,
too big.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right. So maybe I'll send my binoculars back then, Vinny.
Nah, keep them for something else. Look, if it's a clear night, look at different stars. It's definitely cool.
All right. Well, thank you, Vinny. Appreciate that. 800-848-WABC. Let me say hello to Gordon in Canada. Hello, Gordon.
Hi, Frank. How are you today?
Great. Thank you.
I wanted to talk about William Shatner, but Nicole's call really bothered me.
All right. So what do you want to do about it? You want me to give you her number so you could take it up with her personally? Oh. How do you want to handle this?
No, I just think she has some kind of axe to grind that I don't get. I can't wrap my head around it.
I don't think so. She struck me as a perfectly nice woman who on this issue might disagree with me or other people.
By the way, the William Shatner, there was a small article in the Toronto Sun about him being terrified about going into space.
Yeah, I saw that. He made those remarks at Comic-Con here in New York.
Yeah, but I liked when he said about sticking his face on the window hoping he doesn't see somebody. And you mentioned the
Twilight Zone. Yeah, that was funny.
That was hilarious.
Thanks, Frank. All right. Thank you, Gordon. 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. One other issue that I wanted to bring to your attention before we got out of here. Hey, apparently I am. Boy, did I pick a day to miss Jeopardy. I had to take my wife to the doctor yesterday. She's in a mode of her gestational period where she has to go now every 2 weeks. So I took her to the doctor and then she was hungry. So we went to eat at a Mexican restaurant afterwards, which I thought was just okay. I wasn't crazy about the menu. But anyway, while we were having Mexican food, I was informed by Molly that a Jeopardy era came to a close yesterday and Matt Amodio, who had the second longest winning streak in history, who'd been winning like crazy. He'd been winning more than Charlie Sheen and Donald Trump combined. He lost after believe it's 37 or 38 consecutive games. Here was the end of the Jeopardy matchup last night, if you didn't get to hear it.
Jonathan Fisher at 14,600. Did you come up with Austria? You did. We know that's correct. But did you bid enough to put you in first place? You did. This takes you to $29,200. You are our new Jeopardy champion. Congratulations. And we have to say goodbye to Matt Imodio with an unbelievable 38-day winning streak. That is one for the books. It has been an honor and a pleasure.
38 days. So I am waiting. We need the matchup of the century. We need him versus Ken Jennings and James Holzhauer. So I suspect this person that won yesterday is not going to be somebody that has a lengthy winning streak of 20, 30, 40 matches. I think it's going to be one wins four, maybe five, and that'll be that. But got to hand it to him. Matt Imodio, an incredible, incredible streak. 38 wins. Really remarkable. He is a computer science PhD student, and he had the second longest winning streak in the history of the game show. Earned $1.5 million in prize money. Can you imagine? $1.5 million. Huge. Huge. 800-848-WABC. Eric is on Long Island. Hello, Eric.
Hey, Frank, how you doing today?
Great.
I just wanted to get comments on what's happening down at the border right now. I mean, all these policies that are being put in by Democrats and people who are far left politicians, all of these policies are to do one thing, and that is to ultimately shift the demographics of America in their voting favor. I mean, you can look at how people vote, the policies that they put in, looking for amnesty for 11 million illegal immigrants. Who do you think those people are going to vote for if they get their citizenship here?
Well, look, I think there's a fair point. And look, I've been covering this for years. I mean, the aspect of the story, the only aspect of the story that was new to me was that there's no prison sentences for youthful smugglers of these people. But it's not just one political party. The Democrats, you're right, have a vested interest in turning a blind eye towards illegal immigration for votes. But make no mistake, and thanks for the call, Eric, Republicans are very eager to have increased illegal immigration as well. Why? Two reasons. One is cheap labor. The Republicans, which by and large are owned by the Chamber of Commerce and other similar groups, similar business groups, they love that cheap labor because that means lower consumer prices. It means they can offer their prices to consumers for the lowest possible price. That's number one. Number two is you're seeing a situation where that so that's I mean, that's it. It's lower it's lower prices and cheap labor, which a lot of these businesses just can't get enough of. The other thing, and I've said this for years, a lot of the social conservatives that dominate the GOP, they and Larry Kudlow has said this, and I've talked to Larry about this. They love the fact that the only thing that is keeping the Catholic Church in business these days are Hispanics. And Hispanics, particularly in border states, both legal and illegal, are filling up the pews at Catholic churches. So from the Democrats, you get them not wanting to do anything about illegal immigration because the caller is right. They want votes. Conservatives and Republicans, they don't want to do anything about it because they love the cheap labor, they love the low prices, and they love the social conservatives that it fills the pews at Catholic churches, which would otherwise be empty. But for immigration, you would see Catholic church attendance plummeting even faster than it already is. 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Joel here in New York City. Hello, Joel.
Hi, Frank. First and foremost, you know, the question you brought up, I caught the latter part of it, right, regarding the invasion of this country unabatedly. it's moot because our leaders, the current administration, they're in favor of it. They're against Trump so violently and viciously and evilly that they'll do anything on the planet to hurt his records, you know, and him psychologically. Now, the first solution regarding this problem is to follow the international law and go after Mexico's Obrador, President Obrador, the leader. He's the biggest culprit. Trump slapped sanctions against him. He warned him he was going to leave NAFTA, and therefore, president of Mexico, he stepped in and stopped the inflow into America, you know, of the illegal, because they have to go to Mexico.
Right. I'm aware of that, Joel. Again, I want to encourage you to read this Washington Post story on the childhood migrants. Nothing you just said addresses a solution to that at all. At all. So, I mean, you're kind of rehashing old partisan talking points, from what I can tell. 800-848-9222 if you want to participate in 15 Seconds of Fame, where you get to be heard on any subject for 15 seconds. Meantime, want to encourage you to check out Life Change Tea. It is a product that I consume just about every day. It gives you a ton of energy without caffeine. It is specifically blended with a powerful herbal proprietary formula that gives you more energy and tastes great. It comes in three different flavors. My personal favorite is the pomegranate, but whatever your preference is, there's a flavor for you, mint or just plain old regular tea. No fillers, no GMOs. It is 100% organic. It's a mild cleanse and a daily detox that cleanses you from the inside out. Their slogan is, the tea that makes you go. You can read the testimonials for yourself at getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. This is a phenomenal product that will improve your digestive health, that will keep you regular, and will keep everything moving in the right direction. Getthetea.com. They sell a lot of other supplements on there as well. And whatever you get on there, whether it's a tea or one of these other supplements, then you will be able to get free shipping anywhere in these United States. You will also get to enjoy the $5 off coupon that the owner of Life Change Tea gave you if you put in the promo code Frank. So go to lifechangetea.com, use the promo code Frank. WABC. This is the other side of midnight. I'm Frank Morano. It's time for you to be heard for 15 seconds on any subject you like. It's time for
the other side of midnight. This is 15 seconds of fame.
1-800-848-9222. Let's say hello to Neil on Staten Island.
I just figured out why you want to go to strangers' houses to watch the fight. It's because all your friends are afraid you're going to seduce their mothers.
Anthony is in Edison.
Yes, good morning, Frank. I got the simple answer to your simple question. There's a juvenile justice system for American citizens. There should be one for illegals that are being mules and coming in, sneaking people into this country. And if I were the Republican Party, I would hold the Democrats hostage like they hold us.
Henry is in Manhattan. Hello, Henry.
Hi, Frank. Regarding the storm on the Sun and the consequence, there was a fiction book called 48 Hours about this very subject and it bringing about the end of the of life on Earth.
Thank you. Frankie in Glendale.
I think we should just put mines across the border and call it a day. That'll stop them from coming across.
Steve is in Manhattan.
Also, Greg Kelly and the big cat went at it yesterday afternoon. Listen, folks, we wouldn't even be talking about the illegal immigration thing if Pat Buchanan became president. Go Buchanan, go. 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 Go Buchanan, go.
Roger in New York City.
Under the current administration policy of minoritizing, even dodoizing, whites and Caucasians of this country, tens of thousands of highly skilled and financially self-supporting Eastern Europeans are giving up hope.
Rick in Toms River.
Good morning. I just want to say I hope everyone votes for Curtis Wheeler. He'll be the greatest mayor of New York City because his opponent is a Yari Kokogene. Have a good day.
Eddie in Nassau County.
The only shovel-ready jobs ever provided by the Democratic Party was the chronic chore of digging out the male bovine excrement that these Ivy League imbeciles perpetuate.
Fred in Yonkers.
Frank, I didn't realize that coronal mass ejections and solar flares were predictable. Kind of like, we want the flory-dories, we want the flory-dories.
800-848-9222. Nicole in Westchester.
Hi, Nicole from Westchester here. Just coming back to say to all you boys that I triggered earlier, hate to point out your hypocrisy. Hope your daughters don't date 30 years younger men.
Carol in New Jersey.
Hey, I loved the Columbus Day coverage yesterday. And you know why Eric Adams wasn't at the parade? He was in New Jersey. That's why.
Interesting. And finally, Tom in the Boogie Down Bronx.
I'd like to say I used to like Cheers very much. I used to watch it every week. And one day I came in, I put the radio on from work, and all of a sudden I heard this woman on the radio. I said, oh, Shelley Long must have a radio program. Then when the commercial was over, I heard that it was really Monica Crowley. Monica Crowley sounds like...
Oh, well, 15 seconds, Tom. We let you go over a little bit in the hopes that you would end your point, but took us a little while than that. All right. That's about it for this portion of the show, but you are in luck because coming up in just 1 minute, Juliette Huddy is back, and we have a ton of news to break down for you. If you want to stay in touch with me on anything that we've covered today, you can email me, frank.morano@wabcradio.com. That's frank.morano@wabcradio.com. You know, someone brought up, they emailed me that the original captain of the Enterprise was Captain Pike, not Captain Kirk. I would have accepted either answer in the $1,000 minute. That's why the question was, on the original Star Trek, who was the captain of the Enterprise? It doesn't say who was the first captain of the Enterprise. Because, of course, so we would have accepted Captain Pike, but there were 79 episodes, and 78 of them aired. In the 78 that aired, Captain Kirk was the captain of the Enterprise. The only episode that depicted Pike as the captain of the Enterprise was the two-part episode, The Menagerie, which was a flashback. So, I mean, we would have accepted Pike reluctantly. It's meant to be an easy question that everybody can get, like, who's the bad guy in Star Wars? It's Darth Vader. So we're not trying to trap anybody. All right. Stay tuned for the WABC Early News with Juliette Huddy and me. Matt Sapienza's got sports. Deb Valentine has all the local news you're going to be hearing about. Sid Rosenberg will join us with a preview of what's coming up on the Bernie and Sid show. To be continued.